Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever time of day it may be, wherever you are across this great land of ours, from the rock. That would be the island of Guam. In the west, I guess, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Good morning. Well, see, there I go again, always wanting to say good morning. Anyway, it's great to be here, whatever time of day it is. Lots of good news, and I want to thank all of you out there as we blaze through the WTAM Weakest Link contest. Just watched The Weakest Link again today, and I love that show. I love that woman. She'd actually be a fun interview on the phone. Whew, she's mean. Anyway, the results are in. I'll read this from the WTAM website. The results are in from the latest cyber vote. With the largest vote in WTAM cyber history, check this out, folks, 68,624 votes, Art Bell was voted as the strongest link on the big one. That's what they call themselves, and they are indeed the big one, WTAM. A quote, we used WTAM as an example of the new game show that premiered on NBC, and Rush Limbaugh, Dr. Laura, Kim Mihalik, Dr. Natasha, Mike Trevisno, I can't say his name, Trivsono, maybe, Kevin Keene, Bill Wills, John Webster, Casey Coleman, Paul Harvey, and finally Rick Gilmore were voted off as the weakest links in the order that they are listed. It was enormous. 68,624 votes, Rick Gilmore with 89%, myself with 11%, the last left standing, I guess. And so thanks to you all, thanks to WTAM. And, by the way, Rick Gilmore is not an evil force with evil minions. He's actually a real nice guy who does a local show on WTAM, and I understand it is very popular indeed, hence the fact that he was the second last standing. So that was a lot of fun last night. That was an awful lot of fun last night. And who knows? Maybe other stations will deign to do the same sort of contest. A lot of fun. Every now and then, you've got to give TV a little bit of credit. They come up with some good ideas. Well, as I told you, I will continue to keep you informed of the latest ratings as they come in, covering a two-month segment of my return from February through, I guess, the beginning of April. In Seattle, we just got those today. KOMO Radio, of course. We've just gone wild. We went from a 6.1 AQH to a 13.3. That would be a 118% increase. 2554 from a 3.1 to a 7 share. That would be a 125.6, it looks like, increase. That's a big, big increase. Following Cleveland, WTAM, back to number one in both categories, just flat out number one. Seattle, of course, also flat out number one, both categories. Denver, Colorado, 12 plus 131.6% increase. These are big. 2554, 183.3% increase. These are absolutely monstrous. San Diego, KOMO Radio, number one across the board again. Just flat across the board, number one, 12 plus 69.2% increase, and so forth and so on. So I've got a lot of reasons to be thanking all of you tonight, being voted the strongest link by that incredible margin in the contest, and of course, the ratings. Thank you. Thank you all. And we will continue to do whatever it is that we do. In a moment, coming up is Richard C. Hoagland. We're going to try and get yet another update on what's going on in the Antarctic, as though anybody really knows exactly what's going on in the Antarctic. It's been, this has really been some story, hasn't it? Really an amazing story, what's going on down there. So all of that directly ahead, and then in the next hour, Alan Mesher.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
All right, the man who was such a big part of the incredible recent PAX TV special all about Mars. Boy, was he good, too. Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, welcome back.
Welcome back to you, too.
I'm not going to do a long introduction because they know you.
If they don't know us by now, they'll never know us.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, I saw your special. I thought it was fantastic. Everybody should know. They put off the second or the replay of it, and I think that's good. Until when?
The 27th of May.
May 27th.
Yeah, PAX apparently had 3 weeks of other programming that normally, you know, they would rerun the rerun the 2 days following the broadcast, but they can't do it for 3 weeks. So on the 27th of May, the special will be rebroadcast on Mars. It's called What is Really on Mars? We have a section of the website at the top of the Enterprise page. If you go to our main page, there's a link there to where people can actually get the tape. There's about 4 to 6 weeks for delivery, I understand. Even the PAX people are having trouble fulfilling orders. So, just, you know. Now, a number of my friends, unlike you, did not see it. They slept through it. They marked it on the wrong date on the calendar. They were out walking the dog.
Oh, boy.
It's amazing. So they've all said, how can we get a tape? You go to Enterprise and log on to the site there, and you can order a tape.
All right. Well,
and, one other thing.
Yes.
You know, you say my special. I did help write the script. They asked me a lot of questions. We put a lot of people in front of them to interview. But there were a huge team of people at Grizzly Adams Productions and at PAX who actually put this thing together hands-on. And I must say that I have been interviewed countless times over the years. It's been like a generation, Art. 20 years I've been doing this.
Yes.
This is probably the best package. It's probably the best in 1 hour. It's like, remember the old Carson routine? Everything you ever want to know about Mars and Sidonia and all that?
Sure.
This is it. And you've been following what we've been doing.
Closely.
Would you say that's a fair characterization?
I would, yes.
It even gets into the 19.5 in a very interesting way.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I brought that up having been educated visually on the program last night.
I heard it last night.
Yeah, there you are. The visual, finally understanding. You know, you talk numbers and people's eyes start rolling, but when you see it applied visually, Richard,
exactly,
there's a big impact.
Well, remember what Gene Roddenberry told me many, many, many years ago when I brought him all this in the flush of first finding what we might be dealing with? And I spent like hours at Paramount, and we went to lunch in the commissary. And I mean, I've known Gene for years. We're very good friends. We did a lot of neat stuff together. And, you know, here's the guy who created Star Trek, you know, which, of course, is one of the reasons why we call this the Enterprise mission in his honor.
Yes.
And he looked at me with the photos spread out all over his office floor. And he says, but Dick, I mean, this is now like, what, 15 years ago, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
He says, but Dick, if this is real, it would be on television. So as of Friday night, Gene, you know, wherever you are, looking down.
It's on TV, yes.
It's real.
All right, very good. Now, Richard, update. Everybody wants to know. Well, what about the Antarctic? What's going on now?
Well, we're kind of in a holding pattern. As you know, because I called you, we got some very interesting communication today from sources that we frankly don't even want to talk about because it's somewhat sensitive. And we have sent a response back, kind of a test, to see
yes.
whether this is legit.
Yes.
And we will report later in the week what we get. One of the things that this source has reported, if I can call up my emails here, is that there appears to have been 4 people on that rescue flight.
Yes.
Who were not exactly being rescued.
4 of 11?
4 out of the 11.
Yes.
And this source, which is, as I said, placed in a position to know, says categorically that those 4 either quit or were fired.
Well, I told you my sources were saying there was a big brawl down, a big fist fight down there. So, I have no idea what the truth is anymore about this, and we may never know.
Well, as we did get last week from a source that we can quote, which is Frank Carsey, who was the director of the JPL Vostok Europa drilling project. You know, the drilling into Vostok?
Yes.
As prep for drilling ultimately someday in the oceans of Europa?
Yes.
He said on the record that for the last several decades, the National Security Agency, you know, the deepest, darkest, blackest agency, you know...
Had been in the whitest place in the world.
Had been in the whitest place in the world, yes. Doing what? You know, as I said to Mike Barra the other day, what have they been doing? You know, getting microdots off penguins?
I know, it is. I mean, why would you take an NSA asset, and I think that's what they call them, and put this person in, or persons, in the Antarctic, where they would have to suffer through a long, boring, dark winter for what?
Exactly. Now, we have also posted on Enterprise tonight another update, which is the Europa aspect of this story. Because remember, the whole Lake Vostok gambit was really supposed to be a test bed for drilling through the ice safely, sterilizing the probe as it went so you didn't get forward or back contamination, as a simulation of drilling through the ice on the little moon of Jupiter called Europa that I predicted 20 years ago would have life in it, if it existed, and finding out what's there.
As a matter of curiosity, Richard, the current progress of our space program in mind, what year would you think we're going to be getting to Europa?
Never. Because
yeah, exactly,
our sources,
right.
Our sources...
So why practice?
Well, but this all happened suddenly. This all has come to a shuddering halt in the last year. As you know, there was an early plan to go to Europa with a flyby and, you know, send something into the ice and send up a spray of material and then kind of catch it on the fly.
Yeah, I remember that, yes.
That was nixed. Then there was a lot of public outcry, some of it from this program, and NASA instituted a longer-term plan to actually put an orbiter in orbit around Europa using radar to send signals down through the ice to measure the thickness and, you know, the temperature of the ocean down there and get kind of conditions for the possibility that life might exist. But in order to finally know, you got to land, you got to drill, and you got to put a probe down.
Right.
All of that has been completely halted. The last update on the Europa orbiter was of May of last year. A year ago, everything has been frozen. No RFPs have been put out. Those are requests for proposals for instruments or specific experiments scientists would fly.
Right.
So we are in limbo. And the cessation of the JPL drilling project in Vostok is in keeping with the idea that, as one of our sources told us, and this is a NASA source that does not want to be identified under any circumstances, they said, in terms of knowing what's under Europa's ice, you're not going to know in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is very serious because when you put all these dots together, it says that the whole Europa gambit for Vostok was a blind. It was a misleading direction. That, in fact, the Vostok stuff is about what's under Vostok, and that when that survey came out on January 18th of this remarkable magnetic anomaly, the NASA grants to JPL for the Europa Vostok probe ceased. All activity that was progressing, you know, from 96 forward to get into that lake and find out what's there as a test bed for Europa, that stopped.
Well, maybe they don't really want to know what's below Vostok any more than they want to know what's below Europa.
Or maybe they already do, and that brings us back to the NSA.
Well, that's what I meant by they don't want to know. That's
well, because if you've got a secret project which has gone ahead and done what they really wanted to do, you don't need to spend all this money up front and in public pretending you're going to do something.
You know, it's really good. Having known you and been friends for as long as we are now, I can actually think like you.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know. It's just a thing.
Well, you know, it's like this Tito thing. I mean, probably when we come back after the break.
Oh, Tito. No, let's talk about Tito now. Richard, if I had $40 million or $30 million, I would take 20 as Tito did and go for a ride.
Hell, Art, if you had 21 million, you'd take 20 and go.
Exactly.
Because you would make it up.
I mean,
the back end.
Yeah, how much? Well, forget the back end. If I didn't make one penny from it, I would go. Because how much money can anybody, this is a basic philosophy of mine anyway, Richard, how much money can anybody spend in a lifetime? This chase after money is really overrated. And so to have that happen in your lifetime versus the government and your relatives fighting over whatever's left, I say, go for it. Let's
Absolutely.
Take a ride. And he did, and good for him. But there's more to the story,
there
isn't
there? There is so much more to the story. First of all, if you look at the news reports, it makes it sound like this guy is some wimpy billionaire who made a lot of money, you know, playing the stock market,
yeah,
has too much time on his hands, is bored stiff, and said, oh, I'm going to go and, you know, go up to space. Not true at all. It turns out that Dennis Tito has a remarkable pedigree. He was, at the same age that I was called on to advise Cronkite at CBS,
yes,
he was writing mission profiles and flight directory scenarios for our earliest missions to Mars.
So he's a man
JPL.
Who had a dream.
He actually designed the trajectories for Mariner 4, which was the first American flyby of Mars. A few days ago, we understand from one of his colleagues, he actually asked JPL for the plans for that spacecraft so he could have a duplicate built for his office. He also was part of a three-man team with a guy named Burke and Norm Haynes, who I know at JPL, that designed in one afternoon on a blackboard the successful rescue mission for Mariner 9. Which was the first successful orbiting of Mars by a spacecraft, namely the U.S. Mariner 9, back in 1971. So this guy is a JPL brother, if you will.
Sure.
And what's astonishing is to see how this American citizen, who has made his pile on Wall Street, he was very successful, he used his engineering and analytical techniques to basically psych out how the market works, and he made a pile of money.
Had to go to the Russians to buy in.
He goes to the Russians. He's paying his $20 million to the Russians who are putting it into the space station to make the NASA station a success, so
right.
The money is not going into somebody's burger joints in Leningrad.
Why, no, but why did an American with the bucks have to go to Russia as a number
That's
one question?
That's so bizarre, because it's like the Russians are teaching us about enterprise and capitalism and entrepreneurship.
Yes.
There's something wrong with this picture, everybody.
Something really wrong,
and
yes.
And when Golden was asked yesterday, you know, what he thought of Tito,
yes,
reporters say he was practically frothing. He talked about him as, in fact, I got a piece of tape, but he was talking about him as this, you know, rich, bored billionaire who had nothing better to do with his money. The political spin is out to basically make this guy into some kind of frivolous bad guy. And he's exactly the opposite. You know, when you see his sons there in
well, the ultimate question is, what's wrong with NASA? Why are they so against somebody going to space who's got the money to pay their fare? What's the deal? What's the big deal? Why should they be upset?
You know, conspiratorial...
Why shouldn't we be proud as Americans to take our own into space? Why, to see an American go buy his way in Russia, that's embarrassing.
Well, you know, when you look at what the astronauts are doing and what Golden says that the space station should be doing, oh, research and all that, no, space should be democratized.
Yes.
Space should be open to everybody.
Yes.
What this is revealing, and we'll get into it in more detail after the half hour, is that NASA really doesn't want to open and democratize space, and they're doing everything they can to keep us from gaining access. We have had plans. You know, when I say we, those of us that have been interested in space for the betterment of all mankind,
yes,
for like 20, 30 years,
yes,
we've had plans for mining operations, you know, utilizing resources from asteroids, putting solar power satellites up there. The private space community has had zillions of plans, and nothing except for communication satellites has ever come to fruition.
All right, well, the big question is why, and we'll ask that when we get back. It's the bottom of the hour. I'm Art Bell. Good morning. Evening, afternoon.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001. And Marie's the name of his latest flame. He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, blackest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere. And Marie's the name of his latest flame. Though I smiled, the tears inside were burning. I wished him luck, and then he said goodbye.
then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and they use them to help us to
take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Want to take a ride? Hell yes. That's what Tito did. That's what he's doing right now. And can you blame him? I certainly don't. But the big question is why? Why would he have to go to the Russians? Why would an American with money have to go to the Russians to get a ride on the International Space Station, to which I believe we are the largest contributor? It's a really, really, really good question. By the way, remember the rumor last night there had been ET contact by SETI? There have been reports and rumors on the internet by certain irresponsible parties that a SETI detection has been made at the Parkes Radio Telescope in Australia. Well, actually, this all evolved, apparently, from a publicity stunt by two students involved in a Science Week festival in Geneva, Switzerland. There has been no detection by Parkes or by the SETI Australia experiment, which runs in tandem with other radio astronomy at this telescope. So there you have it, folks. A Science Week festival in Geneva. Oh, by the way, if you go to my website and you, on the left-hand side, you'll see library there. And the first item is news and web links. You click on that, scroll down a little bit to where it says related websites and interesting news. And there is a website. There's a link to a website called How to Build an H-Bomb. That's right. How to Build an H-Bomb. And I believe they may actually give instructions there on how to do it. But a lot of it is pretty funny. It begins, making and owning an H-bomb is the kind of challenge real Americans seek. Who wants to be a passive victim of nuclear war when, with just a little effort, you can be an active participant? Bomb shelters are for losers. Who wants to huddle together underground eating can? Winners want to push the button themselves. Make your own H-bomb is a big step in nuclear assertiveness training. It's called Taking Charge. We're sure you'll enjoy the risks and the heady thrill of playing nuclear chicken. Anyway, it then goes on to say exactly how you would build your own H-bomb. And then, of course, at the bottom, it will give you the various uses that one might have for such a valuable possession. Richard C. Hoagland, back in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
Once again, from the mountains of New Mexico, here is Richard C. Hoagland, and now we get to the why part. Tito gets to take a ride, but has to go to the Russians.
Well, originally, he was trying to get to Mir. There was a corporation called Mir Space out
right,
of Holland
right.
that was trying to raise cash for the Russians, who are cash-strapped.
Right.
And they basically presented this idea, because Tito wanted to go, well, you know, go to Mir and spend $20 million for the Russian program, and you can go.
Yeah, but Mir is now at the bottom of the ocean with bacteria growing all
over it. Exactly. So then the Russians switched, and they said, okay, why don't you come to our module of the International Space Station?
Right.
And Golden said, "Over my dead body." And there's this huge hue and cry. Let me read you something.
Oh,
that I
no. Golden's all right, isn't he?
No, Golden did not want him to go at all.
I know, but he said over his dead body. I mean, he is all right.
He is all right tonight.
He's okay. All right.
Now, I've got a letter here, which is posted on space.com, from Senator Chris Bond, who is the current chairman of the Senate committee, Senate Appropriations Committee, that oversees the NASA budget. And, you know, this really is a political problem. So if enough people out there are a little irritated by Mr. Bond's reaction to an American citizen paying his own way into space, maybe you ought to drop him a letter or an email. This is what he sent to Dan Golden on my birthday, on April 25th, as a matter of fact. "Dear Mr. Administrator, please be advised that I am very disappointed by NASA's apparent capitulation to Russia in allowing Mr. Dennis Tito an opportunity to visit the International Space Station as a paying tourist. As you may know, my staff has been assured on several occasions by NASA that the type of visit proposed by Mr. Tito to the ISS would not be allowed. This consequently further undermines the already shaky credibility of the ISS program. Moreover," I love this part, Art, "moreover, this trip demeans the overall purpose of the ISS as a world-class laboratory in Earth orbit where astronauts can live and conduct research."
Hmm.
Now, if that isn't an elitist reaction coming from a Republican, boys and girls, you know, where's free enterprise? Where's entrepreneurship? Where is the celebration of American pioneering spirit? I think Dennis Tito is maybe more important than Neil Armstrong tonight, because what he has done is to break the tourist barrier. He has basically, with the help of his Russian colleagues and friends, said to NASA, "Niet, you're not keeping me off the space station that I'm paying for."
I heard, by the way, they made him sign a paper saying if you break anything, you've got to pay for it. Did they really
yes,
do that?
They did. And they also said that he could only be allowed into the U.S. parts of the station if he was escorted. Now, the current commander is a Russian. Remember, they changed out the first crew, headed by Shepard, who was our guy.
Yes.
And now a Russian is commanding the station, and he basically told Golden, hell, he can go anywhere he wants to. And in the first few hours, apparently, he's been in every nook and cranny. The U.S. astronauts have treated him very civilly and graciously. You know, there's a difference between politics in orbit, where your life depends on your comrades and your colleagues and your fellow, you know, cosmonauts and astronauts, and what's going on in Washington. But this brings up some very curious things that happened just before Dennis Tito was launched, which was on Saturday morning at about 1:37 Mountain Time,
yes.
our time.
Yes.
Because as you may or may not know, if you've been following this story, everybody out there, our space station, our glittering jewel of the best and the brightest and the state-of-the-art, had massive catastrophic failures in all of its computer systems.
That's amazing.
Simultaneously.
Yeah, that is amazing because, you know, even here, Richard, where I am, I've got a computer here next to me, and then I've got one behind me, and I have others in the house. But these two, I've had a computer failure. But never have I had any two computers go down at once. And
they
these are just your common variety loaded with Microsoft stuff type computers.
They had all the computers go down.
Uh-huh, amazing.
They had all the systems that are connected and linked to those computers, commanded by them, go down.
Amazing.
Which includes, this is curious, the live S-band and KU-band television transmissions.
Oh, gee.
So there is no live coverage of Dennis Tito's visit as a tourist to the space station. The only coverage you're going to get is out of the Russian satellite systems when the station flies over the Russian ground station, and for a few minutes a day.
I've seen a couple on CNN of Tito.
It's only through
there.
The Russians.
No, I'll be damned.
The Americans, we're as wide open as space in the sky, and we have never hidden anything. They're not letting you see what this guy is, an American citizen. Any interviews that he is going to undergo through our network
have
through
to come
our,
from the Russians.
Have to go through the Russians.
You know,
there's something wrong with this picture,
yeah,
boys and girls.
Yeah, there sure is.
So let me get back to my Mr. You know, my conspiratorial take on things.
Of course.
Why would all of the computers crash? Because what happened when the computers all crashed, the Endeavor was you know, docked. It was tied up, you know, in one
day. Well, maybe Mr. Tito is computer literate.
Well, he is very computer literate because he was a JPL rocket engineer, remember?
Right. Yes, oh yes.
So what they did is they wiped all the hard drives,
yep.
Pay attention carefully, everybody, and they uploaded all new software, so nothing on those computers that existed last week exists this week.
Or nothing they don't want there.
That they don't want Mr. Tito to see.
Oh, boy.
Now, what do you suppose we're doing upstairs, our NASA, that an American citizen... Remember, this is a guy who is worth, what, about $1 billion?
I don't know what he's worth.
You know how much money he pays in taxes?
A lot.
Proportionately, this man has a lot more right than you and I are to be up there because he's paying for it. And he's paying double because he paid the Russians, and they're putting their money back into their modules and their equipment and their experiments on the space station. So what is it that they don't want an American citizen who is not controlled by them
to find out? Yeah, I know.
To find out.
I know.
I want
open question.
60 Minutes or Nightline or MSNBC or my friends over at CNN or somebody in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Basically start asking the question, why does an American citizen have to go to Moscow to get to space?
They're not going
to
do that. You know why they're not going to do that? Because they want to be invited to NASA press conferences. And if they ask the wrong question, you and I both know, the invite doesn't go out. They get left out. I mean, that's the kind of pressure that is brought to bear on the press. People don't understand how that works.
Well, the good news is that the Russians now have the bit in their teeth. And the head of their program said a couple days ago that they're going to be advertising for other Dennis Titos. And you know who is kind of making noises like he wants to go next?
Who?
James Cameron.
Really?
Yep. You know, James Cameron
did
The Abyss, and he did, you know, what is it? Oh, come on, my mind is going. Help. You know, he did, you
a
know,
lot of good stuff.
The Titanic.
Right.
He's doing space stuff with NASA. Documentaries as well as fictional stuff. He is like the 800-pound gorilla.
Well, if it keeps up, they're going to have to build Mir 2.
Well, the Russians have said they're not going to build Mir 2 now, that it would be duplicative of their work.
I know, but if it keeps up like this, this dispute, they're going to have to end up building it.
Well, there is a plan. Now, get this. Leonard David, my old friend, was on McNeil-Lehrer tonight, Lehrer. McNeil is doing other things. And he said that there is a plan by a private company called Spacehab to build an actual module, like a wing for the space station.
Yes.
That would be used to basically have dorms and hotel rooms and kitchens and whatever that would house tourists so that you could segregate them off and they would have their own little playpen.
Yeah, I bet NASA won't let it happen, though.
And guess what they want to call the module?
It would take too much time. Go ahead.
Enterprise.
Oh. Enterprise, that's a great name, actually.
It has a little ring to it, doesn't it?
It does, yes, of course.
Now, he says it may fly as early as 2003. Apparently, there is some serious interest in doing this because the Russians now realize that there are enough rich people who can afford this. There's always that third seat on the Soyuz spacecraft.
Yeah, but pretty much they're all over here, though.
Well, but they just have to take a plane flight to Moscow, and there's a ticket to space.
Sure.
And, I mean, there's lots of people that we know that would love to go who have the money. And you know, Cameron's only one of a long legion, so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But what it's done is, of course, finally open the door. This guy is the first ordinary guy not sanctioned by our space agency. So the fact that all the computers crashed and they were trying to restrict him to basically one little room is bizarre. I mean,
well, Richard, here's
this is so un-American.
If I put on my own Hoagland hat, then I think, look, Tito was computer literate. I was actually being facetious a while ago, and if there's some software in there designed to be running programs that they don't want him to know about, a crash would be really convenient once they figured out they couldn't keep Tito away.
It happened right after the launch was sanctioned. Now, here's something else. Remember my alignments?
Yes.
Remember the mystical, magical alignments and all this?
Yes.
That launch had to take place on a Saturday morning. Remember how they were keeping Endeavour attached, and they said, you might have to wait. Why don't you delay your launch, Russians? And the Russians said, we're going to launch absolutely at 1:37 Mountain Time.
Right.
It actually was 7:37 Greenwich. I ran the numbers tonight just for you and a friend of mine, David Livingston, in California. And when they launched from Baikonur, which is really Turitam, Sirius, which of course is what the station is named after,
yes.
ISIS.
Was at
3.333333 degrees.
Hmm.
And I have a feeling that's involved. I have a feeling the political reaction by Golden is because Tito is an unwanted guest in whatever is going on upstairs this week. Now, I had another communication from a deep throat source that's been very reliable in the last couple of years.
Yes.
And he says to me tonight, and he's going to talk to me tomorrow, but he says there is something big about to come down around all this, some major event. And I have a feeling that Mr. Tito, with his JPL background and his Russian friends and his opposition from NASA, is part of something interesting that may unfold during this coming week.
Hey, how about this? How about something big going on down here? Where better to be if something were to happen here than there?
That's right.
Just thinking like you, Richard.
Okay.
Anyway, listen, time grows short. I know there are some other things you want to get to.
Well, there was one rather sad note, and that is on Saturday night, apparently Vince DiPietro, who used to be a friend of mine, said some rather nasty and unseemly things on your air on the guest host's time. And I simply want to say to everybody who wondered about that, it's completely absurd. It's all absolutely silly. He's making the accusation that I have done nothing original, that I've stolen his research, that I've palmed it off as my own. And all I want to do is point out very gently to Mr. DiPietro and any of the people who would believe this, that if they simply open monuments, you know, my seminal work on the last 20 years of my investigation of this and the chronology of the investigation of everybody else, they will find literally dozens upon dozens of references to DiPietro, to Molinar, and to all the pioneers that have got us to where we could put together a coherent television show.
I was going to say also he was included in the PAX TV special as well.
Absolutely.
So,
and in the new forward to my 2001 edition of Monuments, which I just finished writing a couple of days ago. It's now gone to the printer. DiPietro and Molinar are fully credited with a remarkable idea 20-some years ago, which the latest 2001 image that Malin gave us has confirmed, which is the eyeball in the left-hand eye socket of the face on Mars. So for him to go around and do this sour grapes number, frankly, it's getting tedious, it's not true, and I want everyone who would even think that it could be true to simply go and refer to the record. The record shows it is completely and totally false.
It's in your book. And your book was written how long ago?
1987.
87.
Speaking of them, we have about 100 left of the old version. If you want a
signed
original? Copy.
The original?
The original, all right, before the 2001 edition, which has some very interesting surprises. I spent a lot of time on it.
But originals are cool.
The originals are cool. I will sign them. The number, again, is on our website. You go to 800-350-4639, and there's about 100 of them left. So it's first come, first serve for the Art Bell audience.
Give that number again. Nobody ever gets a number first time.
1-800-350-4639.
Okay.
For the PAX tape, and I'll sign the book, and we'll look forward to an extraordinary new year because 2001, there are things happening, both in space and here on Earth.
There sure are. And whatever comes of this story in the Antarctic, something is really rotten in
Antarctic.
Want to
hear another odd coincidence?
Sure.
Mars Odyssey left Earth, you know, Arthur's mission, named after 2001, is headed for Mars.
Yes.
It will arrive in October. On April 7th, it was
launched.
On April 19th, it turned around and took its only picture of Earth as it departed with both a visible camera and the infrared camera.
Yes.
Guess what it imaged on the Earth? The Antarctic.
You're kidding.
Not kidding. It's on the
JPL website. I was going to guess Egypt.
The Antarctic.
Now, really.
Now, really. Isn't that special?
Isn't that special? Yes, indeed. What do you suppose?
I just think that if our model is correct, that the NSA has been down there for decades, And there are artifacts left from a previous epoch. You know, the last polar excursion, as your guests were discussing last night?
Yes.
13,000 years ago?
Yes.
It would be the NSA which would be in charge of keeping the secret and finding out what they all mean. I mean, who else? You know, the biggest, deepest, blackest agency we have going.
Well,
and in a future update, we're going to limb out, now that this is all kind of coming out, some of the other strangenesses about Antarctic research going back to even before World War II.
You know what? It just bums me out, Richard, that the most important questions for mankind, aside from the presence of a god, would be...
Who are we?
Who are we?
And what are we doing in this
What
place?
Are we doing here? Why are we here? Were there others before us? Are we the first? All of these questions, the most important questions for mankind, are the ones that they seem hell-bent on, if they are discovering them, keeping them from us.
'Twas ever thus. But
well,
everybody out there can help change it. And that's what your program is doing, Art.
All right, my
changing
friend.
The landscape.
Out of time. Thanks, Richard. We'll do it again soon, of course.
Later, my friend.
Good night. From the mountains of New Mexico, that is Richard C. Hoagland. I'm Art Bell, and coming up next is Alan Mesher. Tighten seatbelts and prepare.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
For those of you joining us this hour, thank you very much. It's done. It's all done. The results are in from the latest cyber vote on WTAM's Weakest Link contest. In the largest vote in WTAM cyber history, 68,624 of you. By a margin of roughly 89% to 11%, Rick took the walk of shame, though it isn't really the walk of shame at all. Rick Gilmore is actually a proud walk, for he is one of the most popular hosts on WTAM. But Art Bell was indeed voted the strongest link on the big one, after 11 others in front of me, I guess, went. So there you have it. That's kind of cool, and I wanted to thank you all for your votes. I promised a, what was it? Saucer in every pot or something or another. I'll do what I can. Coming up shortly is Alan Mesher, a highly gifted writer, healer, energy master. For more than 25 years, this dynamic healer has helped thousands of people heal unresolved emotional issues, taking them to their next level of success and well-being. He's also helped a large and significant clientele overcome serious challenges to their physical health. He's written a book called The T-Zone, and people have called it the best book they've ever read on the subject of transformation. Previously, he was a publisher of the well-read Yoga Journal. He hosted a radio talk show himself entitled Adventures in Consciousness on KEST Radio in San Francisco and KLBJ Radio in Austin, Texas. His work has been featured in the San Francisco Examiner, Philadelphia Inquirer, on and on and on, universities. He currently lives in L.A. He's going to be an interesting interview, and he's coming up next. Stay right there.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
And here is, oh no, wait, just one more item before we go to Alan Mesher. And that is for those who joined at this hour. This you don't want to miss before the guys in suits come and make us take it down. I found a pretty neat website thanks to somebody who emailed it to me today. And if you'll go to our website, www.artbell.com, go to News and Web Links. It's in the library section, News and Web Links. Go there and just scroll down to the second section. We have a link to a website called How to Build an H-Bomb. Now, from what I can see, briefly glancing over this website, there's a lot of humor in here, of course. But I think, now I'm not sure, some of you scientists can tell me. Let's see, step one, getting the ingredients. It seems to me that they actually do more or less a few precautions. They've got a good section here. More or less describe to you how to build your own H-bomb. Yeah, step two, assembling the bomb. Now that you've acquired the enriched uranium, all that's left to do is assemble your A-bomb. Go find a couple of stainless steel salad bowls. Why, they're serious. So you see, they'll probably make us take this down. Stainless steel salad bowls. A word to the wise about wastes. Going first class, it says here. If you're like us, you're feeling the economic pinch, and you're going to want to make your bomb as inexpensively as possible. This thing is all right. And then putting your H-bomb together, and part three, what to do with your bomb. Let's see, use your bomb at home. Is it for you? Let's be honest, the H-bomb isn't for everyone. Frankly, there are people who just can't handle it. They break out in hives at the very mention of megadeth fallout and or radiation sickness. The following quiz will help you find out whether you have what it takes for home H-bomb ownership. If you answer yes to six or more of these questions, then you're emotionally eligible to join the nuclear club. And on and on. So they'll probably make us take it down. You're going to want to see it before it gets ripped down by the men in black. Here is Alan Mesher. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Art. I'm not going to build an H-bomb, but I'm going to buy that light. I live in L.A., you know. I'm going to need a few of those.
It's going to be a hard summer in California.
It is.
No question about it. You've got a little hum on your phone.
Yeah, I can hear that, too.
Can you?
Yeah, let me change to another phone.
Yeah, let's do that.
Hold on.
I'm all for that. I like experiments where you get to try different stuff. I like good audio.
All right.
Yes.
How is it? Is that better?
Well, it's actually a little better, yes. I can barely hear it now.
Okay, good.
It is still there, but...
It may just be in the line, too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know. You've got another phone number, right?
No, that's it.
That's it?
Yep.
That's your only phone number?
Unfortunately, where I am right now...
What kind of American only has one phone line?
This kind. The best kind.
I've often wondered, you know, Alan, what it would be like to own your own, at least atom bomb. I mean, you don't have to go all the way to H, I suppose, but your own atom bomb. I mean, you'd have respect.
From who?
Your neighborhood.
Yeah, you'd have a lot of fear. I don't know if that would be respect.
Well, they're interchangeable sometimes.
Yeah, it's true. That's true in the world of, you know, power politics, they sure are.
They sure are. Why would we even be dealing with the Russians if they didn't have one? Not likely. I don't know if you've been to Russia lately, but...
Not lately, Art.
It's a total disaster area.
I know.
You know, they would be more or less a third world nation were it not for the bomb.
Well, they have the bomb, but internally they are a third world nation.
Yeah, they are. They are. All right. Well, so you sent me a list of things that we might talk about tonight.
Alrighty.
I'd like to skip all the way to the last thing and ask you.
So you have to come up with a big question right away, right?
Yeah, well,
you're not very nice to me.
I really like this question. What do you think is the purpose of life? Man, what a question.
You know, it is a great question, and when I do my seminars and in person in front of groups, I always ask that. That's my lead-off question, because I always want to know what people are going to respond to that.
Well, you put it down here last.
Yeah, I know. One fellow at one of these seminars, a younger guy who was there with a very attractive young woman, raised his hand and he said, the purpose of life is to breed. And I said, well, you know, it's actually true. He left early. He had to go breed. But, you know, I think that the answer to that question, actually, all puns and humor aside, is rather twofold. There are two parts to it. And part one is that one of the purposes of life is to succeed and have a good income and have a stable life and be able to enjoy what you can on the material and emotional levels of life. It's really crucial. You have to do that. And that's what the Western world has really been all about, material success. There's another part of the answer that's a little different. It's more the spiritual context, and that is to know self, to attain a higher level of consciousness, to become one with the higher aspects of our being. Let's call them, for want of better words, the good words, soul and spirit.
But aren't these two concepts completely at odds?
And you know, that is a very good, astute question. And the answer to that is, they have been. And then the question one should ask right after that is, but why should they be?
Well, because I think because there's a general impression that to get ahead in business requires a certain level of a non-spiritual ruthlessness necessary to business and to the Western way of living and our economy and the way we do biz over here and all the rest of it. It's somewhat ruthless, so it's going to be antagonistic to a love your brother, do no wrong, do unto others, and all the rest of those sayings that I could come up with, right?
Well, you know, that's true. That model has existed, but it doesn't always have to be true. I mean, you don't have to be weak. I mean, because what you're saying about the spiritual concepts and principles is the connotation under that is one of weakness, and the connotation under the ruthlessness is one of strength.
Yes.
Okay, but I don't think of spirituality as necessarily being weak. It's a great, great strength. And that doesn't mean that if you're a spiritual person in the business world, you're going to roll over and be easily taken advantage of, be weak, and not be able to succeed. I think that if you're a spiritual person in the business world, you come to work every day with an added bonus. You have an invisible host behind you. You have a power that others who are not into it may not have. And if you apply that power in business, oftentimes you will succeed, and oftentimes you will succeed in a way that tends to be a bit easier than the guy who's out there being ruthless.
Well, a lot of people would disagree with you.
Well, sure. But that does not make it not true.
How many examples at the top, because that's where the kind of people we're talking about ought to be at the top, could you give me people who have followed a spiritual path to get there?
You know, that's a good point. And
I mean, name one politician, for example. They all leave bodies behind them.
Oh, yeah.
Corporate leaders, they all leave bodies behind them.
Yeah.
I don't mean as in murder and that sort of thing, but I mean...
But I do know that a lot of people that have got to the top, I mean, the only name that comes to my mind right away, because this is not a topic that I generally get into. It's not something where I have a lot of expertise or data to come back at you with or to add to the discussion. But I do know that a fellow like Andrew Carnegie back in the 19th century, one of the principles of which he operated and believed that would help him become more successful was to tithe. He felt that by giving a certain amount of his profits and his income and his business away, that he would get more. And that has been a principle that people have used in the church, they have used in business, and they have used to increase their success. So that's one example where people have gone against the normal grain of business. You don't give anything away, because if you give away, you're going to have less to have. You're going to have less profit.
Yeah, but to climb toward the top of any business means many times crushing your competition.
Yeah, it does.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't see how you would get there without encountering that fork in the road.
Well, that could be true, but yet at the same time, it's not necessarily an exclusive term or argument. I do believe that one can be a decent, good person and succeed in business.
I think so.
And many of the people that do succeed are decent. Not all of them are horrible.
Boy, do we have a terrible phone line, Alan. Just terrible. All right, well, I will allow there are no doubt some, but we stray a bit. The purpose of life. So the purpose of life, then, is to succeed while remaining what? Somewhat level with yourself in terms of your karma, that kind of thing?
Well, karma is an interesting thing. Yes, to stay level with yourself, but karma also means that you can't talk about karma without also talking about free will. And we all have free will. I mean, the game of life is really quite an exquisite game. Let's talk about that for a minute, because that could be part of the discussion here.
Sure.
Because in the game of life, we are given free will. We can do what we want. Every day we may have choices. Are we going to get up and have a good day?
Right.
Are we
going to
get up and eat good food? Are we going to get up and take a shower and look good and go out and give the day and our work the best we can give it? We all have choices to make every day. And that's wonderful to have free will, but on the other hand, there's another part of the equation that people oftentimes overlook, and that's the notion of karma. And that is the fruit of your actions. If you act good, you build up energy and momentum in your karmic bank account, and eventually good comes back to you. If you act badly, if you act ruthlessly, you know, you can succeed by hurting people, by stomping them, by destroying them. Many people do that. It really is the path to the top. But, you know, the Buddha once said that people can do this, but eventually their evil actions will come back to them. Now, he also said they may not come back to them in this lifetime. It may be other lifetimes up the road, but it eventually comes
well,
back.
But there's the catch.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who don't believe there are other lifetimes, nor for that matter, do they believe there's really any particular hereafter, you know, up there, down there.
Absolutely true.
And if that is your belief, then to achieve the goals you talked about earlier, the quickest, best path is obviously to tread on, no matter who gets in your way or whatever gets in your way.
That is true. But you know,
isn't that the purpose of organized religion in America to some degree, to make people to keep them towing the line, to keep people somewhat in line, believing that there will be some accounting for their actions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that does not mean that it isn't so. For instance, people used to believe that the world was flat. People used to believe that if you set sail across the ocean, you'd fall off the world.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, those were beliefs that were in vogue. People believed them wholeheartedly. But what did their belief actually have to do with the reality? The reality was different from the belief. They wouldn't fall off the world if they sailed across the sea.
Right, but they didn't know that.
Yeah, they didn't know that. And exactly that's the point. Now, people that don't believe that there are consequences for actions, and if you do harm, harm will eventually come back to you, they don't know that. But it doesn't negate the fact that it isn't true. And just because they don't believe it doesn't mean that those consequences will not come back eventually to haunt
them. Well, then convince me that there is either an afterlife or a heaven or a hell.
How can I convince you? That's
exactly
personal experience.
Exactly, you can.
That's right.
I'm just playing the devil's advocate here a little bit.
And Art, I want to tell you something. You do it well.
I have curiosities about it, and I wonder about it, but I don't know about it, Alan. I don't know there's, you know, some other existence, conscious existence after this one. I suspect there is, strongly, but that's as far as I can go. I've really got to get my hands on before I can believe. That's the problem.
You know, there have been so many people's accounts of hearing the voices of loved ones that have passed on.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's sort of endless stuff. There's so much. There are so many of these personal anecdotes, and the only way that one can enter into those realms or even begin to think about them, we can't yet prove them scientifically. Our science is not at a point where it can go into these realms. There's no way to measure something that isn't material. So we can't measure these things. So the only way, the only doorway that we have available to us is one, personal experience, or the anecdotal evidence of others.
Yeah, but you know what? Science may soon actually give us the answer to these questions. They're getting closer all the time. The metaphysical and the scientific are beginning to get closer and closer and closer. And I often wonder, what would our world be like if we conclusively, scientifically, knew there was an afterlife? That would change a lot of things, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, it would absolutely change a lot of things. And then the rules of the game would also become more widely known. You know, and then people would want to live more in accord with the rules of the game rather than not.
All right. You believe the world is headed for a great big change and that we are in some sort of cusp period
right
now.
Right.
A cusp meaning a period of time in between or during which the actual change has begun?
Correct.
Well, you join almost all my guests in believing that. We all seem to agree on that fact, that something big is on the way, and that we're either seeing signs of the change around us right now, or it will suddenly occur, and most people would say in the next 10 or 15 years. Do you agree with that timetable?
I think the timetable will actually, my feeling is that the timetable will be a little longer. I would say, I think we'll see beginnings of emerging changes of the new order, whatever you want to call it, in the next 10 to 15, but I think it'll happen more in the next 20 to 30.
Well, that's not a big difference.
No.
Either way, it's well within the lifetimes of many of my audience. A really, really big change. And we're in the cusp right now. My guest is Alan Mesher. And from the high desert to the world out there, this is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Can't stay alive.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
Alan Mesher is here. He's my guest. We've got yet another telephone plug in. We may be in luck this time. And we may have jinxed the hum that we had on the line. We'll find out in a moment.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
By the way, thanks for all the new art on the front of the webpage. No pun intended. The artwork that you see come up, and every time you load it, just about, you get a different one, is all sent by those of you out there. Very, very talented people. Anybody wishing to submit artwork can do it by sending it to webmaster@artbell.com. But it really is cool stuff. I mean, some of these are, you are very talented people. There's no question about it. So we don't make that up. Nobody's commissioned. It's all done by those of you out there who submit the artwork. Really good stuff. Back to Alan Mesher now. Alan, let's back way up now. You say that we're in a cusp period, so let's back up even further and define, well, I guess we know where we are now, most of us. The question is, where are we going? Where is the planet headed? What do you see ahead for us?
In the cusp period or after the cusp?
No, no, no. What is this event that we're headed toward?
Well, I don't know that it's going to be just one event. You know, it could be some forms of disasters occur during this cusp period that will lead us to what will be the new system in the world, the new order.
You're going to have to stay real close to your phone.
Okay. Can you hear me well?
If your lips are touching the phone, you're close enough.
I'm close enough. Can I kiss you?
That's much better. Yes. All right.
Okay,
if we're in between what we are now and what we're going to be or what's going to happen, what are we headed toward? Flat out, I want to know.
Well, flat out, no one absolutely knows. No one can say that. But what I can say about it is this. I think that the new system that the world will enter into, or the new order it will become, will be defined by certain concepts. One is inclusion. I think inclusion is critical. I think we're going to enter a time where people will learn to get along. Do you remember back when we had the riots, and a little after riots, when the police attacked that guy, Rodney King, and they caught it on video camera?
Yes,
and he was screaming, "Why can't we get along? Why can't we get along?"
I saw it 10,000 times.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone did. But that's sort of the question. Why can't we get along? And I think we will start getting along. There will be more inclusion. But I think what goes on, before we get into what the big events will be, where we're going, I would like to touch into the cusp, what the nature of the cusp is about. Because I think that is really important to an understanding of where we're going.
All right.
Okay. So in the cusp period, we have a lot of instability, a lot of fluidity, and a lot of unexpected things occurring. And in addition to that, the energy that people are experiencing is energy that is going downward into their lower centers, which means that there's so much incivility, so much self-absorption, so much emphasis on sexuality as a form of identity, so much rudeness and crudeness in the world, and that's where all of this comes from. So all of these qualities are what one can term, lump together and call lower nature qualities. And the lower nature in people is getting stimulated fiercely, and it's causing a lot of the things we're seeing in the world.
Why? Why is it being stimulated abnormally?
Well, let me get into that, because that is where I'm going. You asked the right question at the right time. Because I think what it's doing, it's stimulating this negative part of people so it comes to the surface, so it can be looked at, examined, and become eventually cleared. And that's where someone like me comes in, because my work is really about clearing all that up. And I've never seen a time art like I have in the last 10 to 15 years, and more the last five of that, where people's negative aspects are closer to the surface and ready to be discharged than they are now. Everyone is at the breaking point or the boiling point.
Yeah.
And this stuff is boiling
over. My question is, though, why?
Because this is the end of what has been, and it's preparation for where we're going into what will be. How can people get along, if I'm right about this notion of inclusion, if we're filled with anger, stress, and hatred, and prejudice? How can we get along? And the answer to that is simply we can't. So we have to go through this period where the lower nature is stimulated and all these horrible things are happening and our culture seems to be going into the sink so that all of this stuff can come up and be dealt with and cleared. It is crucial. It is crucial to the future.
Hmm.
So all of us are here now for this opportunity to grow and move this negativity out of our systems so that we can move forward into what will be the new. And another thought, and
so this is no external thing, this is just a process, is that what you're saying?
What do you mean external? You mean,
well,
you mean the big event?
No, I mean, we're just right now talking about why people are so negative, why there's so much road rage out there, why there is so much sexual predation, why society is in such a pickle right now.
Yeah.
I'm asking you, is this just a process that has to occur, or
yes,
or is there something else at work? Some, in other words, I've talked with guests who believe that we are part of the Earth and that the Earth is going through a change right now. And with it, we'll see Earth changes and other things that will occur. But, you know, we're part of that process. And so we're beginning to feel the anxiety of what lies directly ahead.
Well, I have no disagreement with that.
Okay.
I think that is all, that is true, but I also think that that is a result of the fact that there are higher frequency energies pouring down on this Earth, greater light that's pouring down and causing great stress in sort of the Earth of our systems, the lower centers of our systems, our own internal Earth, and it's affecting the Earth as well. I mean, everything is moving towards this amazing peak. And will there be Earth changes? Will there be earthquakes? Will there be mass destruction? Will millions and billions of people die? These are all questions that are legitimate. And the fact is, no one knows the exact answer. It could go in many different ways. But if enough of us do enough work to help ourselves and clear this debris, then we reduce significantly the amount of pressure that is being placed on our planet. And we become agents to help us move forward than being victims that will get caught in the crunch of what may be coming down. And I'll also say this, Art, the clearer that we can be internally, the easier it's going to be able, we're going to be able to pick up on our internal radios what's going to be happening, and we'll be warned, and we will move in ways that will save us from where we shouldn't be to where we could be and where we will be safe. Mm. So that's going on too. I mean, I just think that the world is in a great, great clearing process, and clearing processes are inherently unstable, and they are inherently unpredictable, and they are
chaotic.
Very fluid. Chaotic, that is the word. They are very chaotic. And that is how I would define the cusp period, as one of chaos.
Okay. So how long do you imagine us to be in this cusp chaotic period?
I would say at least another 20 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's going to get worse before it gets better. I have no doubt about that.
I'm a little bit conflicted about how to advise people to live through the cusp period. In other words, they live in a world where there's greed, fear, materialism, sex, control, selfishness, all the things you talked about in here. And they've got to live in that world, and they've got to manage to prosper in that world, which brings us back to the conversation we were having earlier. I just don't know how they do both at the same time. 20 years, that's a long time.
It's a long time, you know, but let's think about it this way, too. Let's think about it. In the United States, we've had it very good for a long period of time.
Oh, very good.
Relatively speaking, we've had it the best of any place in the world.
No question about it.
No question about it. So think of ourselves as being in a balloon. And we're in the middle of the balloon, and this balloon is this membrane all around us, and it's protecting us. And that balloon has been very strong.
Yes.
And the distance between the edge of the membrane or the surface and where we are in the middle of that balloon, there's a lot of space in there. So we've been very protected, but I believe that the air is going out of the balloon a little bit, and we're not as safe as we once were. I mean, we could be hit by bacterial warfare, germ warfare, very easily.
Oh, yes.
You know, I mean, it wouldn't take anything for disaster to strike the United States.
I know. Just look at my webpage with a link to how to build an H-bomb.
Yeah, well, you know, God willing, no one will.
Imagine.
I think we should call it an art bomb.
Imagine the extension of road rage.
Yeah, the extension of road rage.
Right.
It's pretty
Somebody
amazing.
Flips you off and you just hold your switch up, you know, with your thumb on it.
Blow them away. Yeah, yeah. But, you know,
I mean, how do you, let's get really down to the nitty gritty. I live out here where I don't have to, thank God, contend with traffic, but I've driven in Los Angeles and, you know, so I know road rage, and I've had it myself. I mean, we all have. You're locked up in traffic. People around you are doing incredibly stupid things, and it makes you angry. Now, explain to me how in this situation, in this physical situation, you get yourself so centered that you go, ah, stupid guy, poor soul, I wish him well. You know, that kind of an attitude, that good spiritual attitude that one should have, when really what you want to have is a machine gun to be able to blow them out of the way.
Well, you know, that's not the attitude I have. I mean, I don't have poor soul, nice guy. You know, I don't have that attitude.
Bless him
at all.
And his family.
Pardon?
May bless him and his family. May he prosper and do well in the world. For he driveth
that.
Not well.
Yeah, well, that's cool, but I don't do that.
No.
No, and I don't use machine guns either. I just say, well, there's another idiot. I'm just not going to react. I'm just going to take a deep breath and relax. I'm not going to allow myself to get bent out of shape.
Well, I wish I could do that. I mean, I'm type A plus.
Well, I might be type A minus plus.
I mean,
I'm probably just a notch down from you, aren't? But I tell
you, I had the machine gun, there's no telling.
Well, I'm glad you're in the desert. You know, but
there's a reason for everything.
There's a reason for everything. I'm in L.A. and I drive in this traffic all the time, and it's hideous.
It's hideous. Yes.
It's hideous. And the worst thing for me is not so much the craziness out there locked up in traffic wasting time, but it's very enervating. It takes your energy away. You know, so I have to come home and get quiet and meditate a little bit or whatever it is I can do, or maybe go to the gym or ride my bike or whatever, just to get a flow back, just to build the energy back, because I find that being out in the masses and the crowds can be very enervating. It takes your energy down.
Yeah.
You know, but I think one of the most important things one can do, you know, and I want to drop the word, I want to sort of step out of the box where we've been sort of conflicting spirituality and materialism, just to step out of that box for a minute and say this. One of the most important things anyone can do in any realm of experience and in any realm of life is to have strong, effective boundaries where you say, I'm not going to put up with this, or no. I'm not going to allow myself to be manipulated. Or, no, I'm not going to react to you. Or, no, you're not going to get me. I'm not going to let you make me feel bad. You know, all of these things are very, very important, and they are very affirming of oneself. So, you know, if I'm in a situation where there's a lot of road rage, I'm just going to say to myself, and people are doing crazy things, you know, or they've challenged my ability to stay on the road, I'm going to say, I'm not going to react. I'm not going to let it get me. And the more I practice that, the easier it becomes to follow it. And you really have to be able to do that in L.A. So living here is a real test of how centered you can keep yourself without
yes.
reacting and flipping out.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, I do know. Yes, yeah. It's nuts down there.
It's very nuts.
I can't do it. It's life-sucking, as you said.
It's very life-sucking, and I'll say this. I've gone out of L.A. on occasion. And I was with a friend in Santa Barbara, and we were driving back, and we're both rather sensitive creatures. And as you got closer to L.A., you could really feel the energy changing.
Yes.
And it felt as we came into L.A. that we're entering into a black hole.
Oh, you're so right.
You know, and it felt like, God, it's so hard to breathe here. Why are we living here? So, yeah, L.A., I think, is the toughest town in America in which to live. I really
Las Vegas is not a lot different. It's just over the hill from me, and it's overpopulated and has...
Yeah.
Dirty air and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, anyway, that's modern America, not just Las Vegas and L.A., but a lot of America. It's the same all over. People are pretty much the same all over. At any rate, you say we can use the cusp/chaos period
right.
to serve us rather than destroy us.
That's very correct. You want me to comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely, I do, sure.
Well,
how does it serve us?
It serves us very well because, as I said earlier, with all this energy pouring into the lower nature and all of these negative tendencies in people getting activated and people getting stressed out and reacting in ways they normally wouldn't, what it also means is that all of their hidden emotional energetic blocks, they're coming to the surface. They're sort of becoming mobilized. And when this material becomes mobilized, if they're open and willing to get healing, then it's easy to move that material out of their system. Let me just give you an example of something that affects an awful lot of people in this vein. I was working today with a client of mine, a wonderful woman in another part of the country, and we've been working for a while, several sessions. And when she was a kid growing up, she had a mom who was critical of her, who never really gave her much support or acknowledgement, or approval, or just love. I mean, she grew up without that. And
right.
as a child, she believed that the reason she didn't get that approval and that love and that acceptance, which every human being craves, was because, you know, there was something wrong with her. If her mother couldn't love her easily, there must be something wrong with her. So all her life, she has striven in vain to get love, approval, and acceptance. It always is sort of over the horizon.
Right.
And it's something that she can never reach out and quite step into and claim. And the reason she can't is because she believes she does not deserve it. Now, that is the definition, really, of shame, of toxic shame. She was shamed. She believes that there's some part of her that is bad, that can never be reformed, that can never be fixed. And I call this the silent agony syndrome. And it really affects millions and millions and millions of people in our country all over the world.
So then what kind of behavior does that result in?
Well, in her case, it just results in her being very repressed, trying to be nice, and trying to get people to like her and love her, but never really succeeding in doing so because she is unable to feel love in herself for herself. So these parts of her lower nature, this repressed stuff, this pain of not being able to get love, that's the way it's being expressed in her life. But I also say this, Art. You know, this is someone that has a broken heart. And I really believe, after working for 25 years doing this work on thousands of folks, that this is the planet of the brokenhearted. Which was the creature in The Wizard of Oz that was in search of the heart?
God, that's a song title, The Planet of the Brokenhearted.
The Planet of the Brokenhearted.
That's,
I think it was a tin man, and we're all tin men, where everyone's here for an oil change, you know, and fill up the gas tank. We're all here to get that. So part of this thing that I see going on with people, and all of this negative material coming up,
yes,
all of this hurt and all,
yes,
of this anger and all of this rage,
yes,
underneath all of that, in virtually every case, there is a broken heart. And when we go deep enough, it always comes up. And I always love it when we get there, because people, they feel pain in their heart, they feel grief, they feel agony, and they explode. But it's not rage coming out, it's grief coming out. That's the underside of it. The other side of anger and rage is grief.
You believe in reincarnation, don't you?
Well, you know, I do, and I guess I would have to say personally that I have a predilection that way. But just in terms of my working with people, the events that have come up out of them, the experiences that they have had as we have worked on, lead me to believe that, yes, it's very true. Would you like me to give you some examples of why I believe it's true?
Sure.
I'll give you the story of a client of mine from some years ago. She came to me with the onset of cervical cancer. She was really freaked out. She said, "I know you can heal me." And I said, "I can guarantee nothing. I will do the best I can to help you. And that is all I can do." And she said, "Let's do it. It's good enough for me." So I put my hands on her. And I put one hand on the base of her spine and the other over the pelvic region. And I could feel my hands getting really, really hot. And I could, you know, I have a certain kind of sight. I can see energies and I can see these things in that reality. And I could see all this fire all around her pelvis. And I said, "Ooh, this is really good." But you know what? She got really cold. She turned grayish blue, her eyes closed, and her head kept shifting back and forth from side to side, and it got faster and faster, and finally she broke wide open and she started screaming, "I can't see, I can't see, I can't see." And I said, "Now take a breath, just take a breath, relax, and let your mind come right down into this pelvic region where we're working, and tell me what you're feeling and seeing in there." And before you knew it, she found herself back in this experience, and she found herself back in Nazi Germany. And she was married to a German general. And the man was off killing people, killing Jews, and she was spending the war using her station as a wife of a Nazi general to take Jews into her house and get them out of the country. She saved lives. He killed them. The war is over. The general comes home. He tells his wife how much he's hated what he's had to do, how much guilt he has for killing all the people he's had to kill and all the Jews. And she says to herself, "I feel so guilty for my secret, for doing behind his back what I have done. I'm going to tell him the truth."
Oh, probably a bad move.
Bad move.
I knew it. All right, hold on, Alan. We're at the break point here, the top of the hour. They've always said to me, don't tell. Bad move.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
No, 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 no.
take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
There are very few movies that affected me more profoundly than The Green Mile. How many of you saw The Green Mile? How many of you have seen it yet? Absolutely an incredible movie. It involved healing. Alan Mesher can heal. Little surprise about him you didn't know. And that's where we were, and that's where we're going right after the break.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
Again, back to Alan Mesher. We'll spend the next hour with him, then do some open lines. Every week I try to get some open lines in. Alan, you can heal. And I just told the audience, and it's the truth, I saw The Green Mile and cried. Mm-hmm. That movie just flat blew me away. And you can heal, can't you?
Yes.
You were describing that a moment
yes.
ago. How does one come to the conclusion that one can heal?
Well, a lot of people feel they can. You know, it's interesting, Art, because I've been with you before and with Mike when he was on, and we get a lot of calls from people who always say, I feel like I'm a healer, but I just don't know. How do I go about doing it?
So, that's the question.
Yeah, it's a real good question. So I developed a training program, and what's been interesting is the training program is very experiential. In other words, people start, we dive right into it right away. We set up these tables in a room, massage tables, and we work four people to a table. And each person gets to be on that table for about an hour every day. We work, the trainings go 3 days. And then for the rest of the time, they're working on the other people in their group. So they're always in the power. Now, it's very interesting. I have fought my way into a higher measure of light over the last 25 years. And I'm very comfortable with the degree of light and power that will come through me when I work with people. I know what it can do. And what's also very amazing to me is that when these people come to learn how to do this, that power is in the room. I mean, it's enormous. It's palpable.
All right. Is this something everybody can do with practice, or is this something imbued in a special few?
I don't know that it's imbued in a special few, nor do I know that everyone can do it. I think it's somewhere between.
Huh.
I think it's somewhere between. I do know that the people who are drawn to it generally have a real desire to do it, a bit of a gift to doing it. So when they come to these trainings, Art, what's amazing is that all of a sudden they put their hands on someone and that power is flowing through them. And the more they put their hands on people, the more it flows through them. And before you know it, people are crying and sobbing.
All right, maybe I've watched too many movies, Alan, but in the movies that I've seen about healing,
yeah,
almost always it's somebody who is on the lower social echelon of life here on Earth. It's somebody who's possibly even a simpleton, or it's somebody who is agnostic or more. It's somebody who would be very unlikely from a spiritual point of view to ever be able or even want to heal. It just sort of falls to them. Have I been watching too many movies?
Probably.
Okay, so that isn't the way it really is.
No. The people that come to me, that come to these workshops, for instance, we've had doctors, veterinarians, chiropractors, dentists, secretaries, people from all walks of life that feel this calling. It's very interesting, and I think as we go more and more into the cusp period, Art, we're coming more into chaos and more into crises, and people
right.
are more stressed.
Right.
There's more of this call. People, there's like almost like a universal call goes out, and all these people are responding to it. They want to learn how to do it. So, you know, in this training that I'm speaking of that we did in L.A. last summer, a filmmaker friend of mine came down and recorded the whole thing. And so it was very interesting to go back and watch part of it, because you can feel the energy of that workshop is recorded on that tape, and you can actually feel that energy coming at you while you're viewing the tape. So what happened to these people is that what I worked for 25 years to attain, they're experiencing that weekend, and their whole system is becoming attuned to it. So now they're becoming cleaner because they've released some of the blockages in their body.
Alan, can you prove you've healed? And by that I mean, for example, you talked about a lady with cervical cancer.
Yeah, let me just finish that story. That's real interesting.
The doctors diagnosed her,
yes.
No question about it, there is the cancer, right?
Yes.
Came to you.
Yes.
You did what you do.
Right.
Your hands got hot.
Right.
She couldn't see.
Well, let me just, it's a great story. Let me finish it. And
yeah.
Because in this particular case, there was documented conclusion, you know, there was documented.
That's what evidence. I want to hear.
Okay, so anyway, she's on the table, and her head's going back and forth, and she's screaming, I can't see, I can't see, I can't see. And then what she experiences, excuse me, is that this man who was her husband attacked her. He beat her. He raped her. He ripped out her eyes, and he left her to die. And so that's how that life ended. But at the meantime, as she's going through this, she now is starting to scream in German. And I don't know what she's saying, because I don't know German, and when she's... In her normal self, she doesn't know German either.
Right.
And she's screaming, Helmut this and Helmut that. That must have been his name. And she's going on and on in German. And then all of a sudden it ends. And all of a sudden the energy shifts. And instead of being this fiery energy going into her, it becomes this beautiful pastel golden energy. And she gets incredibly peaceful. Just so peaceful. And after it's over, she told me that she was felt herself floating above her body in this brilliant golden light. She had never felt that peaceful and complete ever before. And she never wanted it to end. And I said, well, time's up. It's over. You know, and you got what you needed. Now go see your doctor and get this checked out.
Yes.
It took her a while to get back in to see the doctor, but she did, and he ran some tests. And lo and behold, the cervical cancer was no longer present in her body. That was in the mid-80s. I saw her at a wedding, actually, just last year. She's perfectly fine.
Now, who really did that? Did Alan Mesher... do that? Was Alan Mesher the conduit for that, or was did that lady, you told me now, when that lady came to you, she said, I know you can heal me.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, we have to talk about the possibility of placebo effect. I mean, here was a lady who believed, with everything in her, that you could heal her. And I'm not saying you didn't, but what I'm asking is, what about those who would say, look, the brain is really powerful.
Well,
and if she believed you healed her, then her brain went to work, and by God, she got healed.
Well, golly, that's great. I wish all my clients could do that. I would love that. What I would say to that artist, I don't care. I don't care how it happened as long as she was healed. And, you know, I can't do that alone. The power, I'm the conduit of that power. The power is not me. It exists inside me, it comes inside me, but it also exists outside of me.
Then let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How important is it to the final result, percentage-wise, with regard to those that you have healed, that the person believe you can heal them? How many have come to you saying, I don't believe in this kind of crap, but, you know, hey, this is cancer?
Oh, that's a great story. That's a great question. Let me answer that with a story. May I do that?
Of course.
Okay. This girl that I had seen for a while as a client, a woman, sent her boyfriend in to see me. He was highly skeptical, thought it was a bunch of baloney.
Right.
And he said, the only reason I'm here is because my girlfriend gave you the money and I don't want to see the money wasted.
Okay.
Okay? I
yep.
said, fine, let's do it and let's see what happens. So he got on the table and we started putting the energy through him, and all of a sudden he looked up at the ceiling, his eyes flooded and they opened wide, like, and then they closed again. And all of a sudden, he started shaking, just shaking like crazy. His whole complexion turned gray. He started getting freezing cold. You know, this is in Austin, Texas, where I used to live. It's the middle of summer. I mean, you shouldn't be cold then. But we put some blankets over him. It didn't matter. He was ice cold. And then at a certain point, about a half an hour later in the session, he just broke into tears, broke down completely, and just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed for the rest of the session. When it was over, he was just still ice cold. We wrapped him up. And I just let him sit there for about 40 minutes until he could get his bearings and leave. And then, in those last few minutes, I said, Stephen, tell me, what did you experience when you were on the table? Tell me what you were seeing.
Right.
He said, well, when I was looking up at the ceiling, I saw this white cross. I've never seen anything like that. And then the next thing I knew, I found myself back in ancient Egypt, and I was a slave. And there were long lines of people pulling stones across the desert, and there were overseers along the lines, whipping people who they thought were not performing as they should.
Now, I know I've seen that in movies.
Yeah, there you go. Huh. And he said, the woman in front of me got pulled out, and she got whipped to death right in front of me, and I couldn't show any emotion otherwise it would have happened to me, and that woman was my wife. And he said, I don't think I've ever experienced or felt the grief or done the grieving I needed to do then. And he just, that's what it was about. And his body was freezing cold because all of that energy inside him was ancient. It's ancient energy, and ancient energy is dead energy, and it is ice cold. So when it comes up to be cleared, people are going to be freezing cold. Now, this is interesting, Art, because up until that time, he had been working in a bar. He had been having one-night affairs, and he had been doing a lot of marijuana and other recreational drugs.
Mm.
His girlfriend wanted him to stop all that. And what was interesting is that after the session, he did stop all of that.
Mm.
And he got a job with IBM. He became a good salesman. And 3 months later, he was engaged to another girl, not the girl that wanted him to stop, but to
Whoa.
Another girl.
Whoa.
Well, that's the way it goes sometimes, you know. A mutual friend of theirs called me up and said, did you hear how Stephen interpreted what you did to him? And I said, no. What did he say? He said that you had LSD on your fingertips, and when you put them on his feet, you transferred the LSD into his feet, and that's why he had that experience.
Well, whatever.
So there's a situation with a guy coming in highly skeptical, highly not into it, could care less, and yet he had that experience. I would say this. There are four categories of clients that come to see me. Category one, they're open to it consciously. They think it will help, and their unconscious is ready. Their soul is ready so that we can move forward very quickly. That woman was a category one. Category two is people have conscious resistance. They're skeptical about it, but internally, their unconscious is really ready for the healing to take place.
Yes.
That
sure.
fella was category two.
Okay.
Okay. Category three is they're open consciously. They think, you know, this will work for them. They want to do it. They believe in it. But they're not quite ready internally. The soul, the unconscious, the energies inside have not been sufficiently mobilized. These people are hard work. It means I've got to do several sessions with them to start mobilizing, softening, loosening up all that blocked energy before anything will happen. And sometimes they will stop the process and think, ah, this is baloney, it isn't working, I'm not getting anywhere,
right.
I can't afford the money, bye. But if they stay the course and they do enough sessions, then that stuff is going to be mobile and they'll become a category one. And then there's category four, who I rarely ever see, and they are people that don't believe it consciously, nor do they believe it unconsciously. It isn't going to work for them. They're the ones I generally never, ever encounter. So that's how I'd answer that question. You know, you don't have to believe it for it to work.
Think Charlie Manson would be a Category 4?
I've never met the gentleman. I do not know. I know who you mean, but I don't know what category he'd be.
Oh, he's an easy 4, maybe 5.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So what condition they're in when they come to you spiritually is a pretty good indicator of a probable success rate. Is that fair to say? In other words, a category 3 or 4 is obviously not going to have quite the same success rate, right?
Right. Right. Category 1 and category 2 are much easier to work with because the unconscious is ready, and that is the key. The unconscious is ready. Categories 3 and 4, the unconscious is not ready.
How many cases of actual physical healing? And that's frankly what people who are skeptics look at.
Right.
You know, where there's been MRIs or something, and you know there's a physical disease that
right.
has been cured.
Right.
How much of that kind of stuff have you done?
You know, over the years, probably an awful lot, a great deal of it. You know, I'll just give you one more example, and I hate to keep bringing up cancer, but it's what is coming to mind.
Oh, it's a good convincer.
Yeah, it's a good convincer, and you know what the statistics say, that 1 out of 3 in the population would get a cancer in their lifetime.
Right.
And now the statistics are 1 in 2. Did you know that?
I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I don't think I knew it, but I'm not surprised.
So this lady came to me who was in her mid-60s. She had been a family attorney, wonderful woman. And she had a huge tumor attached to her ovary about the size of a grapefruit.
A big one.
A big one that she had removed surgically.
Uh-huh.
However, the cancer had spread to the liver and the spleen and I believe also the pancreas.
Okay, well that's usually the end.
That's usually the end, you know, and she was starting a course of chemotherapy when she came to see me.
Right.
And we started working and I probably worked on her 5, 6, 7 times. And what the results of that were that, number one, going through the chemotherapy was much easier. She was able to endure it much more, you know, just it was just easier. It didn't just destroy her. And she was a very sensitive and fairly frail woman, so that was fairly amazing. But what also happened is that there are some tests that they do for the kind of cancer she had, ovarian cancer, that I forget the name of it, but their testing levels had been exceedingly high. Like, she was up about 64 to 66 when she first came in to see me. I think we did two sessions, and she went in for her first chemo session. Then after the chemo session, they ran that test to find out what the numbers were, and it had decreased by half. The doctor was in shock because he had never seen this. I mean, this was, how could this be it with this chemotherapy?
All right, Alan, where does the power to physically heal in the way you do come from? Where do you believe the power comes from?
Well, the power ultimately comes from God. It comes from certainly higher up in the food chain, shall we say.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure that God is, well, let's leave out God for a second. Are you sure that a human mind, as complex and interesting as a human mind is, may not be capable of the physical healings that you have done all on its very own?
It's possible.
That it does not require a specific intervention by God through your hands or anybody's to do these healings. That it might not just be that the human mind has this incredible capacity, and it can be manifested in ways that you manifested.
Well, it's possible, but then if you say that, how come, you know, everyone who's sick can't do that for themselves?
Well, maybe because they're type 3 or 4s. I don't know.
But if they have mind, what does it matter what category they're in? If they want to heal themselves hard enough and they focus mentally,
yes, but if
do whatever it is they can do mentally to do it, why can't they heal
themselves? Well, if they're not subconsciously ready for it, as you outlined a little while ago, it's not going to happen anyway, particularly with them doing it to themselves, right?
Right.
So, I'm just asking.
It's a good question.
Gave me the answer, and I'm happy with your answer.
Yeah,
but
it's a good question. But you know what was interesting, Art, and I just want to go back to the training thing, because it was so fascinating. A number of those people have gone out now and they're healing, and the stories that I'm hearing back from them are very similar to what I do. So,
sure.
You know, I'm thrilled that skill is that we can pass that on, okay? And that too, that these people can be tapping into and utilizing the same frequency that I'm able to utilize, and they don't have to work 25 years to get it. And it's needed in the world now. The call for healing is so huge in the world right now with the chaos and the stress and the negativity like never before. And the other thing is, more and more people are ready for it than ever before. It's a time for it.
Well, I will agree with you. There's certainly a greater need for it. And I guess you're right. More people are ready for it as a result. Business is good, but that's because the world isn't so good right now.
That's right.
So in the healing business, it's hot times.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time for that. But it's really needed. You know, it's a good time. It's a good thing it's there because the need is so great.
It must be a wonderful thing to be able to, with your own hands, take away somebody's physical pain. Just a wonderful thing. Alan, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Can you imagine? It does work. Healing does work. I've seen it work. If you haven't seen The Green Mile, be sure and see it. I'm Art Bell. Listen carefully to the words. Can you imagine a country where time goes back?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
You go strolling through the crowd like Pete DeLore contemplating a crime. She comes out of the don't bother asking for explanation. She'll just tell you that she came in the year of the cat. When you're up.
Premier Network presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
We're spiritual here, but we also have a link up tonight on how to build your own H-bomb.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
Well, all right, let's do another session with Alan Mesher. And Alan Mesher can heal, physically heal real physical problems, cancer, I suppose many other, or any other, is there anything that you cannot heal, Alan?
Well, you know, there are certain forms of cancer that are very tricky. And Art, I you can't heal everything, and you can't heal every one of everything. Yeah, there are certainly certain things that I can't heal, and oftentimes it's more on an individual basis than on a illness, on a disease itself. Some people are ready to heal, some people are not. Some people will respond, some people will not.
All right. Healers often take on the conditions of their patients. Has this been a problem for you?
No, it hasn't really been a problem. I do know that at the end of the day, sometimes I feel like I've been through a war, and I know that I'm tired and I've taken on a lot of grungy energy, so I clear it, and then I'm fine. So, you know, in terms of taking on those conditions, no, I generally don't.
Is that a problem for some healers?
It certainly can be, yes. Oh, yes.
Huh.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, I noticed that you even say this can be done over the phone. And,
yes.
I know it can because I've had family members that have used it.
Right.
And they absolutely swear by it. But I must tell you, Alan, I have a real hard time with it. Believing that you can... I could call you up from here in Pahrump and tell you about some very difficult thing happening in my life or a physical illness and that you could heal me over the phone.
I could help you over the phone. There's no doubt about it. I make no claims to being able to heal you. What I will tell you is I will give you 100% of what I have, and what happens will happen. Because in this work, you can't really make claims that you're going to heal someone of something. It may happen. It can happen. But it won't necessarily always happen. But I'll tell you, Art, I'll give you an open invitation. Call me up. We'll do some work over the telephone, and you'll experience the energy and power and see for yourself.
I might try it.
I would be delighted to do it with you. I would be honored. It would be fun.
Although... it might change me in some material way, huh?
Yeah, you may get rid of that machine gun.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to do that. I mean, I'm a pragmatic
person.
Well,
we'll take away the H-bomb then.
Oh, the H-bomb? Oh, well, all right. I don't really want an H-bomb.
Good.
Well, maybe I do. I'm not sure about that, actually. It's an intriguing idea.
You know, I tell you what I can do that would be interesting. This might be interesting for you, right? It might get your skeptical curiosity risen sufficiently to want to check it out.
Make me an offer.
Here it is. I have a couple of CDs, one called Harmony and Balance, the other called Vitality.
Yeah.
And on one level, they have some very nice music. I hired a very good professional LA musician to do some wonderful music.
Okay.
And then, but underneath that, we have recorded that healing energy. It is on these CDs. And depending on people's degrees of sensitivities, they have all sorts of experience with it. Some people find that if they have trouble sleeping, they play Harmony and Balance, they sleep very well. Other people have found that Vitality charges them up. I mean, the energy...
So there are hidden messages, right?
No, there are no messages. It's
really?
Energy. We have recorded the energy. Just the energy has no sound, but it is on these CDs. In fact, you know, if you were to play the CD in the background while you're doing your show,
yes,
you might find yourself feeling, wow, I feel so good. I can't believe this. I'm going to stay up for 36 hours. But, but these things, people have had remarkable experiences using these CDs. And so when people buy my books, they often will buy a CD to accompany it because what the books talk about, the CD can help people experience.
All right.
So if you're interested, I'd be delighted to send you either or both of these CDs, and you could check it out yourself.
I'll give it a try.
Okay.
I'll give it a try.
I'll put one. Would you like them both or one?
Well, I don't know. Do I need both?
Well, you might enjoy them.
All right. Yeah. All right, yeah, sure. Send them along. I'll try it. I'm trying anything. you say here there is a relationship between sexuality and identity.
Yeah, there sure is. There sure is. And what I've noticed in a number of clients, and the way I've come to this conclusion is by the work I've done with people. You know, when you see the same thing occurring many times, they go, uh-huh. And the relationship between sexuality and identity is simply this. With a lot of people who do not know who they are, who you would put in the category of lost souls,
yes,
there's a real blockage in their pelvic region right around where the sexual energy center or chakra is, and that's cut off. And when that energy is cut off, they don't know who they are. And when it gets all opened up and the energy starts flowing through the sexual center up and through the rest of the chakras, then that confusion begins to disappear and they become more confident in who they are, and they feel much, much better about themselves.
What is the translation for that? They need to go have sex, or what?
No. They need to clear out whatever blockage is jamming
them. Well, that's what I
up.
Said. They need to go have sex.
No. Having sex is not going to clear it.
Oh.
Having sex is just having sex, but I'm talking about an energy blockage in their systems, in their bodies, that's right there, and sexual activity is not going to heal that. In fact, many people that have this problem, this is the interesting thing, they will project a lot of sexual energy out there to try to get people to get caught up in that sexual charisma, come towards them. You know, they try to use it as a vehicle for getting what they want because they aren't who they are.
Have you ever seen the TV show The Weakest Link?
I don't think I have.
Oh, no, too bad.
I don't think I have.
Well, the lady who runs that, she looks like she needs to have sex. So you'll understand that when you see it.
But what I'm telling you is a lot of people that are highly sexual have a lot of blockage here. And it's rife in Hollywood. You know, Hollywood, the sexual energy in Hollywood is amazing, and it really is a town of lost souls.
Yeah, it is. And why is that so true in L.A., Hollywood, and particularly in Hollywood? Why?
Well, because I think a lot of people come to Hollywood trying to be someone because they feel like they're no one. They've had really bad childhoods. They're looking for love, approval, and acceptance, just like that other lady did. I mean,
yeah, but why are they necessarily wrong? In other words, if a young starlet goes traipsing off to Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
how can you suggest to her that the way to fame and stardom is not sexual? In other words, look at the stars today in Hollywood. Most of them, certainly the women, are there because of, to some large degree, sex appeal, right?
Oh, absolutely. Sex sells, so, you know, and particularly in this period where the focus is so much on the sexual energies, it's even more powerful than it ever has been. I mean, everything in the media is sex.
And yet you say it's all lost souls.
I'm not saying it's all lost souls.
Well,
I'm just saying
a majority or a big part of them or a lot of them.
Well, a lot of them are. I mean, they really don't know who they are. And that's why they're actors. You know, it's easy for those types of people to go into being someone else rather than being who they are because they don't know who they are. It's very common. But there's also, because there's a lot of blocked energy with a number of folks who are in the lost soul category in that sexual energy, they will misuse sexual energy. It gets misused.
You're right, but the other side of the coin is it's also, in Hollywood, the path to success for both males and females.
Yes, it is. And it's not only the path to success in terms of sex appeal, you know, being sexually attractive to the opposite sex, as it is with the masses. It is how stars get to be who they are, and that's interesting. But the other part of it is, you know, a lot of these folks, unfortunately, have to use sex to get where they are.
Right.
In other words, the casting couch is very much alive.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is.
Oh, it is.
But if you were to counsel them in spiritual matters, what makes you think their path in Hollywood would be an easier one than the path they've chosen?
Well, you know, I have had a lot of those people. I've had a number of people that are very well known come to me in the Hollywood set, very big people.
Yes.
And what I can tell you is that they have so much pain inside them. It's remarkable. And as we go through the process of beginning to clear it out, their load lightens. They feel much better about themselves. They carry themselves with a bit more dignity. And they lighten up. They lighten up tremendously. And in some of these cases, the identity problem has been transformed and changed and no longer a big thorn in their side. With some of them, they didn't go far enough, and it's still there.
Huh. So this is a big relationship between one's sexuality
and
their overall identity, or at least the identity they perceive as important for their goals.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
You know, we're bigger than our gonads. You know, and the sad thing is,
although some gonads are admirably big.
Yeah, but even if so, what? We're still bigger than our gonads.
Yes.
And you know, if we never see that, and a lot of people don't, that's tragic.
Well, it is. Listen, back to where we were.
Go ahead.
Where do you imagine present trends given? Because that's all we have to go on right now. Present trends given that the planet is headed.
In the next 20 years, where will it be in 20 years?
Yeah, that's a good question, sure.
I think we're going to be entering the age of inclusivity, connectivity, and greater spirituality. That's what I think will happen. I think we're going to be coming into a time when people learn how to get along because we will have cleared out enough of the lower nature issues and crap so that we can move beyond it.
Which part of all of known mankind's history would support that?
Very little.
So you're saying something really, really new is a-coming?
I think something really, really new is a-coming, and what the ultimate form of it will be, nobody knows. And will it be completely that way? I doubt it. But I think the tone and the tenor will be more and more towards that.
And so these things in our society now that seem new and are so puzzling to us, like kids killing kids, like all the drug use and like all the negativity and everything we talked about earlier, you think this is very transitory, huh?
Yeah, I do. I don't think it's going to last 50 years, let's put it that way. That's my take on it. That is my thesis.
I wish I had the same hope you do, the same optimism you do.
Well, let's put it this way, Art. I hope for all of us that I'm right.
And I guess
for our children, too.
For our children, indeed. And you're going to continue working, I know, as hard as you can. You instruct people then on the phone sometimes about healing, about how to heal. Do you do that?
I don't tell them how to do it on the phone. That's what the seminars are for. You can't really do that over the telephone.
What is it you do on the phone?
With people?
Yes.
Well, people call me up, and the way I always start working is I just say I'm going to put one hand on the base of your spine. I'm putting my other hand on the base of your skull, and you tell me when you start feeling relaxed. That generally will take 1 or 2 minutes. While that is going on and the energy is flowing over the phone lines into them and they're getting relaxed, it's like taking an x-ray. I'm looking within. I'm scanning their bodies, and
right.
I'm seeing where the blockages are, and I'm seeing what has caused it. In general, I'll say something, well, you know, tell me about a period when you were like 2 to 5 years. For instance, I had a fella, and I said, you know, I see a young boy standing and feeling very shamed, and he's done something like, and it has something to do with peeing where he shouldn't pee, and there's a tremendous amount of shame with that, and I see a young boy, tell me about that. And he remembered that when he was a young boy, he used to wet his bed, and that his parents got some sort of plastic cover on there that every time he peed in his bed, an alarm would go off. So there was a shock to his system, there was shame to his system, and that really did shut him down in a very specific way. So I could see what the blockage was, and I would start sending the energy into the blockage and have him make sound as if it was coming right out of that blockage, because what we need to do is connect the head with where the blockage is in the body. So we have that neural connection. And as we do that, then we can bring up all of this heavy, dead, stuck, negative emotional energy and begin to clear it out of the system. And we do that by making sound, not verbal sound, not language, but guttural, irrational sounds like, ah, oh, you know, whatever.
Yes.
And as those sounds come on, first it seems sort of funny to do it, but as you get into it and as all that material comes up, all of a sudden it has a life of its own, and you'll find yourself making sounds you never heard before and saying things you can't believe you said, and your body might be moving and shaking and twisting and kicking, and you might be perspiring, getting very hot or very cold or shaking. All sorts of phenomena will occur as this energy is cleared. And that's generally what will happen when I work with somebody over the phone. We'll get into these spaces.
All right, whether you're over the phone or in person, Alan,
yeah,
and you release this negative energy, where does this energy go?
It's just dissolved. It gets dissolved and it's gone.
But you see, others would say, regarding our souls and our spirituality, mm-hmm, you can't destroy energy.
No, but you can transform it. You can clean it up. That negative energy goes out of their systems.
But it has to go somewhere.
Yeah, but it gets cleaned up and it goes back into the universal pool of energy.
Where it will descend on some other poor soul.
No, it gets cleared up.
You really think then it's gone?
Well, it gets cleared up, and whatever isn't cleared up, I'll cleanse it in my house. You know, because I'll pick a lot of it up.
So then, sometimes you bring home your work with you.
Oh yeah, I bring home my work with me all the time, but I clean it up, I burn it up. You know, it's like you said, you ignite it spiritually and it gets cleared up, it gets refined, it gets clean.
So, tell me again, you've got, I know that you've got the CDs.
Yes.
And, what else do you have to offer?
Well, we have the two CDs, we have the book, The T-Zone, and we have it on tape as well. And we have the training seminars.
Oh, you have book on tape.
Yeah, the book is on tape.
Good.
We have the training seminar, and we have the individual consultations for those who might want that as well.
All right. For those who are interested, and I know they are many, how would they get hold of these things? We've got a link to your website, of course.
Right. Well, first of all, there's the website, and it's www.seriouscreations.com, and you spell Serious Creations like the star, S-I-R-I-U-S, Creations, and Creations is plural, SiriusCreations.com.
We've got a link, folks.
Yeah, and then the phone number is area code 310-228-3100. Yeah, 310-228-3100.
And that number operates during the day or 24
hours? It operates 24 hours a day.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the people can call whenever they want.
And
we will respond to them as quickly as we can.
Okay, and if somebody wants to contact you personally, is that a number generally to order the CDs or the book or whatever?
That's an order number, but they can put in a they can leave a message that they want that, or they can email me from the website.
How hard is it to get an appointment with you?
Well, it depends. Sometimes it's very hard. Sometimes it's not terribly hard. It's on a first come, first served basis. And what I will say is that we will get to everyone as soon as we can.
Hmm.
As soon as we can.
Do you find more requests coming from people who want to be healed, or more requests coming from people who want to know how to develop this power?
I would say both. Almost equally.
Really?
Yes. Yes, you have no idea how many people out there want to develop this power. It's amazing.
Well, and if the world continues as it is now, we're going to need lots and lots of healers.
We're going to need lots and lots of healers. There's no doubt about it, Art. There really is no doubt about it.
Well, all right. Then listen, I want to thank you for being here. And I guess continue your work. You're obviously at a level far above myself in every way, spiritually.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'll get a machine gun one of these days.
I don't think so.
I don't think
you
so.
You don't sound like the type.
No, I'm not.
All right, Alan. Thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you for having me. It's been a delight.
Good night.
Night.
All right. That's Alan Mesher. And he really can heal. And healing really is something that some people obviously can do. I mean, there are lots of documented cases. The only thing about me in healing is I don't understand how it happens and why it happens. But I do understand that, in fact, it does happen. All right. Coming up next, we're going to go into open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. Anything at all in the world. And there's a lot to talk in the world about in the world. We could talk about Mr. Tito and NASA. I think he's doing just the right thing. Absolutely the right thing. Same thing I'd do if I had that much money. I'd take it and I'd go for that ride. How about you?
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. I have been on that path of what I am.
yourself in sorrow while you play your cheating game.
Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
On the side of economy, I'm going to go ahead and take my caller from Korea and then run my commercial set. That's for the bean counters of the network. Hey there. Welcome back.
Hi, sir. Hi, sir. Hey, I was talking to my wife about that. I guess I said the Korean word wrong. I guess it's gai.
Gai?
Like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I have absolutely no talent for foreign languages.
Well, why don't you put your wife on and have her say it to me?
Oh, okay. Stand by.
All right.
I think she's, up.
Get the real pronunciation.
She's kind of busy right now. She's chanting. She's a Buddhist. Buddha's birthday.
Nam-myoho-renge-kyo. Nam-myoho-renge-kyo.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So there's a Korean version of HBO, is there?
Yeah, it sure is. They got Korean, it's HBO. We get like The Sopranos and we get like Sex and the City and all that like that. But then what they do is, the Koreans have a law where they can only have 10% of foreign programming.
Right.
Because, to be honest, American programming is that good. You know, so they don't want, you know, us to, like, just cream the competition. So by law, by mandate, they have it. But we do have HBO. And what it was this Korean horror movie. And it was Gai, which the Koreans, everywhere, every culture has a paper, scissors, rock. And I guess Gai is like Gai by Bo, is the paper, scissors, rock. And I had it happen to me once in my life. I was lying in bed, this is about 2 years ago, and it felt like this thing, like, pulled my arm through the bed, and, you know, just, like, I was moving out of my body.
Oh, yes.
And you get that, that instant shock, and I immediately snapped out of it. And I told my wife about that. She goes, oh, yeah, that's a pretty common phenomena. I go, oh, really? I never heard of it, right? And then we were watching this movie several weeks ago, and I asked her about that. You know, what does that mean? She says, well, that's that feeling where you feel like the ghost or jishing, which the Koreans say jishing, it's like pulling you down or pushing you down into the bed. And I told her, yeah, remember, I had that. So that's kind of unusual.
I think it's in every culture, you know it?
I do, yeah.
All right, by the way, you're at the top of the Associated Press News this hour. That is Korea's. Let me read this to you. It says, in North Korea's highest level contact with the West in 6 months, the head of the European Union arrived here Wednesday to meet with the reclusive leader, Kim Jong II. The trip comes at the time when efforts to promote the reconciliation of North and South Korea across the world's most heavily armed border are suffering setbacks. The agenda could include the North's human rights record, missile program, food shortages, and attitude toward economic reform. Now, I've seen a lot of riots in South Korea near the North Korean border where these South Korean students just are really trying to break down the barrier between South Korea and North Korea, and I've wondered a lot of times why the South Korean authorities, who are probably really fed up with all this by now, don't just open the gates and let them run through.
The powers that be, they have what's called a sunshine policy over here, and the sunshine policy is supposed to, like, you know, we'll be, you know, your friend, we'll be your buddy and stuff like that. Now, the riots, what you're seeing is, like, you ever see that thing where, like, you see a riot on TV or something and it looks like, oh, my God, there's thousands and thousands, and the camera pans back.
Oh,
and
sure. Like, Oh, sure. Yeah. So it's not...
What that is, it's isolated pockets where it's the students, and it's the students during springtime.
I know, but I mean, why not just open the gates and let them run through? I mean, they're trying to crash the gates anyway.
Yeah. they'd be for a pretty rude awakening, you know, because they like their internet. You know, and somebody told me one time that they said, "Yeah, there's an internet capability in cable TV in North Korea. The only problem is only one person in the whole country has it."
Yeah, that's right. All right, my friend. Thanks. We got to scoot.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Take care now.
You too. From all the way from Korea.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Well, as I said earlier, I always worry about the plane crashing. I don't actually worry about it, but I consider the possibility. You have to when you're leaving the ground and going into the air. It's a natural thing for humans to consider that you might not stay in the air, right? First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I have something about these shadow people.
Oh?
Have any of them been described as these horrid things with no eyes?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, we have one night when we talked about the shadow people, and we had an expert here. A Native American. We implored people to send drawings to us. And so we've got all these drawings of what the various shadow people have looked like. And some of them, well, they don't look like the girl next door.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've sort of figured out that a human with no eyes is representative of the instinctual soul.
How did you figure that out?
Well, for one, people with, most people have three souls, instinctual, emotional, and rational. We have two eyes. Now,
why don't we have an irrational soul?
Well,
because people are not rational all the time by a long shot.
Well, yeah, but the irrationality is handled by the first two.
I see. All right.
Okay, now, the myopic, hateful Cyclops has one eye. He has an instinctual and emotional soul. And those who have gone beyond reason are described as having a third eye.
Ah, yes. So we go from one eye to three eyes, depending on the level of ascension.
Well, from no eyes to three eyes.
No eyes to three eyes, right? Huh. How many eyes have you got?
I'd say I've got this little inkling of the third one, but...
It's like your third eye is just beginning to form.
Yeah.
Right there in the middle of your forehead, probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, I always thought that God should have provided us with an actual eye that looks toward the rear. I mean, think how that would be if you had an eye and you could actually, or better yet, how about 360-degree vision? Talk about an improvement. Now, there would be one. 360-degree vision. There would be no peripheral vision because there'd be no periphery. You'd see it all. Slight design flaw there, huh? Or maybe we're just not supposed to see it coming. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
This is Mark calling from Houston, listening to you on AM 740 KTRH.
And talking on a cell phone. Right? Hello? See, we lost him. Now, you ask why I complain about cell phones. That's why. God, we should put them all in one big pile and burn them. All except mine and my friends. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Good morning, Art.
Yes, good morning to you.
This is Mike from Cleveland.
Yes.
I got a question about shadow people.
All right, shadow people. Here
yeah.
we go again.
How can a person be a shadow people when there's no person? A person got to reflect light.
Well, in other words, a shadow person, you mean how could it be from you when you're still a person?
Yeah. I mean, well, I could see another person.
No, the answer to that is easy. It's when you get in a different state. In other words, when you are sort of in that twilight world between sleep and wakefulness, or even perhaps when you're asleep, it may be that your inner being, which does get up and get out of your body, wanders about the house or the area, and you are seen by others occasionally as a shadow person. One explanation. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Were you talking to me?
Yes, you indeed.
Well, that's excellent. Couple points. One is, are you familiar with Kirlian photography?
Of course.
Okay. They shoot people, as a straight shot, and all of a sudden you've got this image behind them, which comes out of the film.
Yes?
It's not uncommon.
Well, I know it will photograph auras.
No, it photographs people. I've seen them.
Well, yes, but if, it's intended to photograph auras around people, right?
Not necessarily.
No?
Kirlian photography, they just shoot people, like they got a regular photograph, and then there's a person behind them, which is really exciting.
And now, that I have never seen.
Oh, my God. Not sure what book it's in, but it's in the Kirlian photography thing, and they shoot plants when they break off a stem and the energy comes out.
Yes, and actually you can still see the rest of the plant where it had been broken off.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's true. That's true. The remaining energy.
Yeah. Second issue is truth or trash.
Yes.
A cure for the common cold.
Well, what about a cure for the common cold?
24 hours gone.
We don't have one.
I do.
You personally have a cure for the common
cold? Most assuredly.
Oh, come on.
No. As
the world has been searching for a cure for the common cold.
No, they haven't.
Yes, they have.
No, but everybody says, well, gee, Mickey, how come you do not advertise nationally?
And why aren't you a billionaire and up there with Tito or whatever, wherever you are?
You want to go up against Merck or Johnson & Johnson? They got the boys of the black.
No. Let's say, just for the sake of this conversation, that you really have the cure for the common cold.
Oh, yeah, you would never
have. No, wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Wait. I'm going to assume you've got it. Don't give me the old story of go up against Merck. You don't do that. You go to Merck and you make a deal with Merck.
No, wrong old buckle. We've been there, done that.
And?
They are not the tiniest bit interested.
Why not? They'd make a gazillion dollars.
No, they wouldn't make a dime.
Yes,
they wouldn't make a dime. They make more money off Sudafed than they do off of my microbes.
Beans. Your microbes would make, if your microbes cure the common cold, they would simply charge lots of money for your little microbes, and they'd make more than they would on Sudafed or any other cold.
No.
Oh, no. See, I'm sorry. Don't buy it. Uh-uh. I don't buy it. Same old story. Repressed. I've got a cure for the common cold, but they repressed me. Of course they'd go for it. Because you'd just simply say, well, if you don't buy it, if you don't make a deal with me, I'm going to take it across town. Sorry, I don't buy that one. Just plain don't buy it. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is Bill in Linwood, Washington, listening to you on Como.
Yes, sir.
From Seattle.
You bet.
And I just wanted to call tonight to talk about the changes that are coming up in the earth and people and things that are going on there.
Yes, you can actually hear it in people's voices.
I think so, and it's been very interesting listening to the program for the past few nights that I think that the ancients knew that we would be entering a time, the galaxy would be entering a phase. That's how they were able to calculate that date of December 22nd of 2012.
Right.
And the guest tonight highlighted the fact, I think, very clearly that people were experiencing this energy, but they didn't know really how to process it.
I think that's fair, yes. I think everybody feels it coming, and very few of us understand how to process it.
Yeah, and like you were talking about in the road rage and the bizarre behaviors from people.
Yes.
I think that the spiritual heightening is occurring, but they're not directing that energy in a spiritual sense. And so to me, listening to the program tonight was very enlightening because I realized that individually we need to take responsibility for those energies and start to find ways to reach out and like your guests last night were saying, to really develop those qualities of love, of being of service to other people.
I really think all of that is right, and I think you're right, and that is what we need to be doing. But I can't say that I'm personally there.
Yeah, me neither. That's a lot of work to get to that point, and so that's why it's been fascinating, though, to listen to your program for the past few nights.
Oh, I think these people are absolutely right about what's coming, about who's going to make it, and the kind of people that we should be becoming. I think all of that's right.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't live it.
How do you think the shadow people fit into all this, though? I've been listening to quite a few calls tonight about the shadow people.
Oh, sure. I think the shadow people fit into it very nicely indeed, because with this change coming, as we get closer and closer to it, I think that whatever you want to call it, the veil, the separation between dimensions is beginning to break down. And the more it breaks down, the more reports of this kind of thing we're going to be getting. That's what I believe.
Well, that would make sense. So it's a real, real joy to listen to the program tonight, and it's a delight to be able to get through it and talk to you about some of these things, because it's really been pressing on my mind tonight, the realizations, you know, just listening to your program for the past few nights.
Yep.
And learning these things.
Yep, I agree with you completely. Thank you very much for the call. I agree with you. And I agree with my guests of the last two nights. However, I guess I'm not evolved enough, because I'm more of a practical person living in a practical world and knowing what it takes to get through. And I'm sure my guest tonight, well, we could have gone round and round about that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How you doing?
Okay.
I have a question about your website.
All right.
It comes up and it has encounters, and
yes,
it has a number up there.
That's right.
I got one night. And I was kind of mad about it. I thought it was one of your Antichrist jokes.
It was.
It was
666666666. Yes.
And then I noticed that it changes all the
time.
Now,
actually, we did attain that number.
Right.
All we did was arrange the programming so that once it attained that number, it would stop there for a little while. Pause there for a little while.
Yeah, I was wondering how many people got it.
So that some of you would get that number, look up, and wonder. And think yourself unique.
Yeah.
And then go check the mirror for sixes in the forehead, you know, that kind of stuff.
Stuff like that, yeah.
And sir?
Yeah.
It worked.
It worked. Yeah.
Oh, it worked.
I was wondering how many people actually got that number.
Probably about a million.
Probably. Okay. Yeah, I was laughing about it.
Thank you very much. And then we kept track of the real number during that time, and then just set it loose from that point. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning. This is Doris from Fresno. And you were speaking a little earlier of an article in Newsweek.
Yes.
About the human spirit and the brain.
The brain and God, yes.
I am rereading a book called Mystery of the Ages by Herbert W. Armstrong.
Yes.
On page 105, it has something similar to that article.
Oh? And what is that?
May I read it?
Not the whole article, no.
Just a couple of small paragraphs.
No, I'd rather you don't read. Just tell me about it.
Well, it says the human spirit imparts the power of intellect to the human...
You're reading to me. Just tell me about it.
Well,
you read it. You can tell me. You absorbed it. So tell me.
I really haven't absorbed it because I only read it a couple of nights ago.
Well, if you haven't absorbed it, then you're going to call and preach it to me here. What do you think? Look, let's just have a conversation. Do you think there's some place in your brain that demands that you believe in a life after death, that demands that you believe in a God, that demands that you worship something? Do you think there's a part of your brain that does that?
Yes.
So do I.
Yes.
Do I think that means there is not a God? No. I think that the question of God is still up there, and it's a really good question, and there probably is a creator for all of this. I believe that. But I do think that our brains are conditioned to believe or to want to believe.
Well, I just think there is something higher than man, that's for sure.
So do I.
Because man can't solve its problems. So
obviously.
So what's left? There has to be something higher than us.
I couldn't agree more with you.
Thank you.
Right, take care. I agree. No, I agree. I just don't know if he really gets as involved in our affairs as a lot of people think that he does, or she does. The Creator. That's all. As a matter of fact, I do believe there is free will, even to the degree that if we were crazy enough to push the button and eradicate ourselves from the face of the globe, that he or she would step in and prevent it. Or any aliens, for that matter. I personally think we'd be gone.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
In America, and a kid without a cent, get a break and maybe grow.
There's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh, yeah. If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play and never see you when deliberately whipping in my way. Well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile because all the while I could see for miles and miles.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Somebody in Fast Blast asks, do you screen your Fast Blasts or your email? Well, I don't know how you screen email. I try and read as much as I can, by the way. But I'm getting about 1,000, 2,000 sometimes emails a day, so I do the best I can. My email address is artbell@mindspring.com. That's it, artbell@mindspring.com. or artbell@aol.com. I have two addresses, actually. And as far as Fast Blasts are concerned, no, they're totally unscreened. Whatever you put in there is what will come to me. Now, do I read all the Fast Blasts? No, of course not. On the air? Of course not. Generally, I do read them all, and I try to do the best I can with email, and of course, as you know, we have unscreened calls as well. So I thought, when I came back, why screen Fast Blasts? What's the point? Just, you can cherry pick anyway, so you might as well let people say what they want to say. And that's exactly what we do.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 1st, 2001.
Think about this. 10% of my listening audience, by extrapolation, 10% of those calling, with atomic bombs. Their own personal atomic bombs. I say it would bring on change. Serious, fast change. Think about it. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Well, yeah, that would be that would bring on some tremendous change, without a doubt. Listen, I got a question for you.
Sure.
About a month ago, I was listening to your program, and you had discussed a strange noise that you had heard just about 40 meters, I believe it was, that had something to do with HARP.
No, that was on 39-something. It was on 3.9 something megahertz.
Okay. Well, I thought you'd mentioned around 40 meters. The reason why I'm calling is because I'm hearing that same or a similar strange sound on 8478 kilohertz.
8478?
Yes, and I have no idea what it is. It's
Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. 8478, huh?
And actually, I heard it last night, too.
Is it there now?
Yes, it is.
It is. All right. Hold on here. Take a listen.
Very, very strange noise, and I don't remember if you had mentioned that there were some odd noises that could possibly be attributed to HARP or not.
Hold on. Is that what you're hearing?
Yes, it's just below the CW that you're hearing.
Yeah, I hear that. You know what that is?
What is
that? I believe that's facsimile. You're hearing facsimile.
That is mighty strange. I've been in the amateur
the
radio.
The upper noise was obviously teletype, but then you go down into that wavy sounding noise that I just got to, and I think that's facsimile.
That is awfully strange. I've been listening for years and years, and I have never heard that before. That's odd.
Well, had you heard the HARP stuff, you want to talk about odd, wait till you hear HARP. Next time it's on, I'll let you know. I think it was 3.39.
I will definitely be tuning in at 3.39. I want to hear what it is that you were
Well, it's not there right now. I actually played it on the air. So when it comes back, trust me, I'll be there and catch
it. Do you have it on your website?
I think there are samples of it on my website, yes.
I'm going to have to check it out. I love your show, and I love your website. It's fantastic, Keith.
All right.
Good work.
Thank you, and thank Keith Rowland. He's the webmaster, and that's a lot of work. You can believe me when I tell you it's a lot of work to put a web and keep a website like that going, particularly as interactively as we do. Yeah, for one thing, it requires that Keith basically maintain the same hours that I do and that a lot of you do, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Konnichiwa, Bell-san.
Ohio, gozaimasu.
This is from KSFO Company.
Yes, sir.
Country.
Yes, up in the San Francisco area.
Yes. Name is Kat.
Yes, sir.
And I have a couple of requests and a question, which kind of falls into the category of a request.
All right.
First of all, Mike Siegel did something that I thought was really neat, and you being a cat person, the same as a lot of the rest of us,
yes,
it would really fit nicely. He called it cattails.
Cattails?
Yes. It was basically ghost stories related to cats and stories about living cats.
Oh, well, I can go one better than that. I've got a picture of a ghost cat.
Yes, I heard that.
Well, have you seen it?
No, unfortunately, I'm computer poor.
You are computerless?
Yes.
Oh, they're getting so cheap now. I mean, you know what? You can go out and you can buy a home computer now, secondhand, that will run at hundreds of megahertz clock speed for, I mean, really cheap. Really cheap. Not brand new. If you want to get a secondhand one, really cheap. I mean, people are throwing them away.
Well, I'll have to look into that when I get some time.
By all means.
Another thing, this business of the Granite Starship.
Yes.
That was quite fascinating.
Yes.
That it overlapped with something that has been haunting me for a long time. Had to do with something that I kept coming up with time and time and time again and never worked on.
What's that?
Relating to a power supply. Essentially using the same mechanism as the drive rings that he was talking about.
Oh.
Almost identical.
Yeah. Well, actually, his design makes all kinds of sense.
It made so much sense. Well, when he mentioned it, and of course, thinking of the power applications that I kept stumbling across, I thought, okay, so you can drive it anywhere. Why can't you suck power out of it?
You can. The answer is you can, and that arrangement would probably generate power. I mean, before you say this cannot be done, you've got to answer a lot of questions, like, how did the guy build the Coral Castle in Florida? Huh? Then how did he move it and rebuild it? How did the Egyptians build the pyramids? I've been there. I've talked to the man who for his whole lifetime, his adult lifetime, has presided over Giza and the pyramids. And there are some questions he can answer. But how they built the pyramids? Not a chance. Not a chance. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hey, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
My name's Connor. I'm in Tampa.
Yes, sir.
A friend of mine turned me on to you, and I just recently heard the first interview you did with Father Malachi.
Yes.
How many interviews did you do before he passed away?
I would think at least a half dozen.
I would say that was the most profound interview and statement I've heard on that subject in a long, long time.
Well, he was a very profound man.
Yes, and I've been starting to read his books. I have a question, though, or just kind of a comment.
Sure.
I was sitting here with a friend the other night, and he had set something down on the table, and then he's frantically looking around my house for it, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he sits down next to me, and he goes, you have a ghost in your house. I'm like, what? And I have a friend on the phone that I'm talking to. He goes, oh, yeah, you do. And I'm like, oh, you're telling me this now? And he's like, yeah, I've seen it sitting on the end of your bed or in the doorway. And I'm like, great. Is it, like, malevolent? Or? And they're like, no, it seems to be guardian. And my father passed away when I was 7. He committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And which brings me back to Father Malachi. And that topic, it was pill kind of, you know, hard to swallow, you know, not to know where he's at, you know, during this time. But the ghost situation seems to be, and I'm comfortable. I've been more, I just got recently paralyzed, actually not recently, 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was in a car accident.
Sorry to hear that.
I was number one in the nation in martial arts, and I've been paralyzed since then. But since I moved into this new apartment, I've had this really, really peaceful feeling. And
well, it may well be that your dad is your guardian angel. It may well be. Who's to say? It may well be that your dad, you know, with regard to suicide, I know what Malachi's position was. I have a far more layman's position about it, and I don't think that people who commit suicide go to hell. I don't think that's a real qualifier. I know it's supposed to be a deadly sin, right? That's what I'm told. My wife is Catholic. It's a deadly sin. You don't commit suicide. But in the way that I think of God, and I can hear you all screaming at the radio now, it's not the way you think of God, Art. It's the way God is. I know, but I can't imagine a God that would send somebody to some sort of eternal hell for having taken their own life in some moment of unimaginable misery, or for a number of other things that suggest you would go to the, you know, the down escalator part. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello? Going once.
Yes, Mr. Bell.
Yes?
My name is Tom. I'm calling from Redding, California.
Yes, sir.
And talking from 1402 Real Talk Show. I wondered, you have many people on your show talking about out-of-body experiences.
Yes.
Did you ever have anybody say that they met two or three different people at one time, traveling together?
You mean sort of a group?
Group, right. Like a group on a mission.
You don't hear much about that. But that's a doggone good question. Next time I have an OBE expert on, I will ask that. It's a good question.
Okay, because I had one here a couple of weeks ago, and there was three guys. There was three guys. And what they did, they must have been on a mission doing something, looking for somebody. But they scared me so bad, I went, you know, I got back into my body somehow. And but I remember that you had Daniel Brinkley on a long, long time ago. I've been listening to you for I don't know how many years.
Actually, I've had him on quite recently.
Yes, I heard him the last time he was on. But I remember when the first time I think you had him on the show was I was living down in Joshua Tree. And it seems to me that he said something about, like, if you see somebody on the other side, not to believe that they're all good. Not to get involved in.
Yeah, that's my view too. I thank you. I share that with him. In other words, most OBE guys, Albert Taylor, for example, and I've had extensive conversations about this, he will always tell you, with a good heart, nothing can go wrong. Don't worry about it, Art. It's all safe on the other side. Whatever you might meet, entities, people, whatever you might do, it's all safe. And at the first moment of distress, physical or mental, boom, you're back in your body. And I've never been able to quite buy all that. But I do think out-of-body is possible. A first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
I'm Louise. I'm calling from Richmond, Indiana.
Okay.
I listened to your call about the guy with the cold remedy.
Oh, yes.
I think you're off the mark on that one.
How's that?
Have you been to a drugstore lately?
Yeah, sure.
$7 for a little bottle of NyQuil.
Yeah, I know. But if you had an actual cure for a cold,
right,
you could charge... what would you pay to be rid of a cold when you get one? $100, $200? I'd pay easily $100, $200.
Yeah,
maybe even more.
No, listen to the logic, though.
I'm giving you some logic, too. Consider it,
please. No, but you're not following your own logic, though.
Why is that?
Well, when you think back about the energy problems.
Yes.
Well, why are they not solving the energy crisis?
Because they're stupid.
Right. Well, the drug companies would be slitting their own throats.
No, they wouldn't.
Yes, they would.
No, they wouldn't. I say no.
Yes.
I say if anybody actually had a cure for the common cold, that Merck or any of the big companies would snap it right up.
A cure.
You bet.
Okay, a one-time, you never have to take any medication ever again for a cold.
You mean like an inoculation, let's say.
Right.
Okay.
Well, if they did that, that would mean that every year I would not be going to the drugstore and spending at least $100.
But you see, there would not be such a thing, because if you know anything about the cold virus or the flu virus, you know that it's constantly changing.
I'm not saying this guy may or may not have the cold remedy, but what I'm saying is that the logic that the drug companies would jump at a chance to cure the common cold is wrong.
I say they would.
I say they wouldn't.
Okay, well, we'll have to live with that disagreement.
You're not listening to the logic, though.
Yes, I am.
If you've been, they devote an entire section to cold remedies in the drugstore.
I've been there.
Yeah,
and I've had colds,
I spend $7-$8 on a little bottle of NyQuil.
Yeah, I know.
And that lasts maybe 2 or 3 days.
Right.
My husband gets drunk on that stuff when he's got a cold. And
well, then he's overusing it.
Yeah, but that's what you have to do.
You're not supposed to. NyQuil is not supposed to make you drunk. You're not supposed to just gobble it, you know.
Yeah, but if you don't, you cannot get a good night's sleep. And the problem is, there are a lot of people who do that. And if the drug companies got rid of the cure, they would be getting rid of a major source of revenue.
Okay. Well, I'm willing. We're going to have to live with that disagreement. First of all, I don't think that there would be a magic bullet that would stop all colds and all flu forever. That isn't what's going to happen. However, they may come up with something that if you get the cold, you take whatever it is in the early stages of the cold, and people will call it echinacea or whatever. No, I mean a real concrete, boom, you've got a cold, and boom, it's gone type cure. Now, that would be worth a lot of money to the drug companies. And it's far more likely than some magic bullet that is going to cure all forms of all viruses. That's not going to happen. But what I talked about might eventually happen, although you have to wonder about a world that has sent men to the moon as not yet to cure the common cold. I don't think there's going to be any sort of magic single bullet. I think it's going to be something you will take when you have a certain form of a cold or the flu, and it will stop it, and that will be worth a very great deal of money. Wild card line, you're on the air.
All right. Arbell?
Yes.
How come he's still talking?
Because you have your radio on, which is an absolute
no-no. Oh, okay. Hey, the group Cream?
Yes.
And the song White Room?
Yes.
Where the shadows run from themselves.
Yes.
Can you play that?
No.
I'd love it if you could get Eric Clapton or somebody and ask him what he meant by that. I think he was seeing shadows back in the 60s.
Well, he might have seen a lot of things back in the 60s.
Yeah. I got something that's, you're going to be really, this, I found a rock that's got a dinosaur carved on it.
Dinosaur carved on it?
Yeah, Brontosaurus.
A Brontosaurus?
Yeah.
A Brontosaurus rock?
Yeah.
I wonder who might have done that.
I don't know, a caveman or something.
Well, I would definitely say you've got something very valuable. I mean, if a cave guy really did do that, it's going to be worth a lot of money.
Can I send you a picture of it?
Of course.
I don't have a computer. My brother's got one, though.
No, so you can send me a photo if you want.
Okay, which one do you want me to send it to, Mindspring? Or?
Yeah, Mindspring.
All right.
All right?
I'll do that.
Okay, sir, thank you. Dinosaur in the Rock. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Howdy.
Howdy.
How you doing?
Okay.
Let me turn this off. There. Have you heard about the Maasai tribe laughing at the government's mass slaughter of the cattle?
The Maasai tribe?
Yeah.
Who are they?
In Africa. They have some kind of stuff they mix together for the foot and mouth disease.
You mean a potion?
Yeah.
And that cures foot and mouth? And so they're saying that the government in Europe, governments in Europe are crazy for slaughtering all the animals?
Well, they are. When you look at what Earthling Man's government has done for the past 6,000 years.
But you know why we're doing it? Now, I listened very carefully. Linda Moulton Howe did an exquisite report on it, and the answer is they do it because of economics. Because
right, and that's the whole thing. In nature, there are certain ones that have natural resistance to that disease. Why not help those individuals become many? But human government's got to go and destroy everything in its sight.
That's right.
That's why the cancer of human government must be removed from the planet.
You think that all of human government is a cancer and that all of government should be removed?
Based by what it has done, it has spent well over $511 trillion, $220 billion in 1 year.
What do you think would happen to America, just out of curiosity, if the American government simply dissolved completely?
It would go back to the hands of the owner of the universe.
Well, back to the hands of the owner of the universe. I don't know if that sounds good. I mean, you might imagine it to be good, but I'm not sure that sounds good to me. That might mean that we would cease to exist and our spirits would ascend or descend, depending on individual behavior, right? Anyway, we're out of time right now. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta.